It's Friday!
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, brr, howdy. Here we go, off and running on this, the 23rd day of December 2022. I guess we finally caught up with the atomic clock. It is Friday on the front porch here on the Horn. It is the Friday on the Christmas Eve Friday on the front porch. And merciful heavens, it's cold. Hi, I'm Robin. Merry Christmas to all. Happy holidays. Happy Kwanzaa. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Yule. Happy solstice. And, you know, happy everything. And happiest of all, over a whole lot of the United States, it's just warm. Because, well, I feel like that line from the disc jockey in Groundhog Day. Rise and shine, campers! It's cold outside. Yeah, it's cold inside too. We've talked about the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion before. And, yeah, it is 50 degrees here in the studio. And that's about as warm as we can get it because the studio itself not particularly well insulated. It's somewhere below zero, a couple of degrees below zero outside. And what that means is... Well, I will do my best. Oh, dear God, the water bottle made noise on the radio again. Oh, whatever. How shall we do? That bougie, bougie water bottle. But anyway, it is, it's cold. It's real uncomfortable. And, well, I'm looking forward to the Friday on the Front Porch conversation. And then the minute that the upload is done, we'll be out of here. Actually, what I'm going to do after we're done, and it's going to be a hateful enterprise to engage in, probably going to go and jump in the car and go across the river and see if I can find some more propane bottles. Because everybody around here where I refill the big 20-pounders, for some reason or another, they're out. Which probably means Walmart will be out, too, so that'll probably be a wasted trip, but it's not like you can call Walmart and find out. At least I haven't been that fortunate as yet. But, like I said, we'll figure out a way to get through this. And, of course, it's cold enough that, well, the little portable... The heat pump/air conditioner isn't doing much good because, well, it's It's too cold for heat pumps to work. But hey, you know, there's an upside. I'm not dosed to the eyes on caffeine. So that's a good thing. I'm glad that's over with. I think I've got like 3 or 4 layers of clothing on, so I'm moving around a bit like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. I feel a little bit like Ralphie in the, well, you know, never mind. So anyway, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so we say thank you, of course, to our 23rd day of the month subscribers. And that means we say thank you to goodness me, thank you. Well, wait a minute. Is this a thing? Yeah, I fear it is. This is kind of a new... Oh, no. Thank you to our friends at Mellow Moonlit Meadow. Our one and only subscriber for the 23rd day of the month. Thank you so much. So very, very much. That means the fundraising goal in our desperate attempt to catch up with... keep up with, be able to pay the power bill is $315, because we've had minor miracles, actually big miracles, all week long, and thank you for all of those. If we can just do that, it will be really close to being able to pay the power bill and get that monkey off our backs and move on to the next one. Sorry, I'm not at my very best this evening because, well, it's a cold like this doesn't lead to really great cognition, I guess we could say. Thinking a lot about being cold is taking a lot of my energy. But if you pop by the Horn chat room, you'll be greeted by early arrivers Kid Mark and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, and capably assisted by Horn chief agronomist and mathematician Roger in Oregon, and the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia, madcap extravaganza will be... merry, wacky, and zany. Program note, beginning Tuesday, Tara Devlin and I will be filling in for Mike Malloy, so you'll get a double dose Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I'll be here for this program, and then Tara and I will do the Malloy program. So I hope you enjoy that as much as we will enjoy doing it. Wow, is that the well drilling rig, Sparky, that's in the, that you put, no. That's a, Sparky says, getting a new well drilled starting next week on Tuesday. And, of course, that works out nicely because at least, well, you know, here, it is, as the old saying goes, colder than a well digger's ass. Always wanted a... Never wanted to find out empirically the truth of that statement, but, well. We may also have some commentary this evening from the feline members of the Horn Family Community Congregation who, are here in the fabulous Horn Studios. Socrates and Kyle are both in here because it's just way too awful out there for... I feel so bad for other animals who are being left outside by people who, well, you know, it's rough. So on this Friday before Christmas, we at least have the good news that the House and the Senate have agreed on a spending bill to keep the government funded through, you know, more than a week or a month. Or it's a $1.7 trillion spending package, and it includes $45 billion more to Ukraine. It will go to President Biden's desk for his signature. The bill passed the House 225 to 201. Nine Republicans, John Katko of New York, Chris Jacobs of New York, Liz Cheney, Adam Kinzinger, Brian Fitzpatrick, Fred Upton, Rodney Davis of Illinois, Jamie Herrera Butler of Washington State, and Steve Womack of Arkansas, all supported the bill. AOC voted no. Representative Rashida Tlaib voted present. But at least the government stays funded for 9 months into 2023. Ron and Raleigh asked, did anyone answer my question from yesterday? Volodymyr Palachuk, famous in Hollywood. Flavia got that. It was, of course, Jack Palance. That's why I kept saying, pick up the gun. Pick up the gun. So President Biden said he would sign the bill as soon as it reaches his desk. And I'm sure there's things in it that nobody likes. So there's something in it that someone doesn't like. But that's why these bills are great big humongous messes. Among other things, Matt, it just gets worse. Well, he sat on his hands through President Zelensky's speech, as we noted in yesterday's program. He and Lauren Bobblehead Boebert, Clanny Oakley, both remain seated, refusing to convey simple common dignity. And Adam Kinzinger, it roasted them for it. Kinzinger tweeting, I couldn't imagine looking at myself in the mirror if I was Matt Gaetz or Lauren Boebert. Smugly sat on their hands while history was made and a real hero addressed us. Imagine caring more about performance art than actual human lives. This in turn caused Matt, it just Gaetz worse, to reply, you should run in Ukraine. Maybe you could win an election there. You never. The guy who was caught funneling money in exchange for sex to an underage young woman, well, he offered up a statement. President Zelensky should be commended for putting his country first, but American politicians who indulge his requests are unwilling to do the same for ours. He did not change my stance on suspending aid for Ukraine and investigating fraud in transfers already made. Jesus. You know, maybe someday... maybe someday a dirtbag like Matt, it just Gaetz worse, will be in a position where he needs help from someone else. Hopefully, that hope will not be there for him. And when he complains, they can hand him his statement there. Well, it kind of reminds me of the philosophizing of a famous man.
You dick!
Uh-huh. Exactly. Meanwhile, over across the pond, I'm sure our friend Claire has seen this story. There's a Twitter hissy taking place over some vile woman in the UK. Video came out of this gross self-hating woman who stood across the street from a women's health care center. Her name is Isabel Vaughn Spruce. And she was in the Birmingham, England area, standing near the BPAS Robert Clinic in King's Norton in Birmingham. And police, you know, authorities there in the UK have created buffer zones. We used to have some of those ourselves before all nine members of the Supreme Court of the United States struck them down. They've got buffer zones for women who are going to reproductive care facilities. And so in those buffer zones, there can be no protests either for or against abortion. For or against. And so, inside the buffer zone, what's her name? Isabel Vaughn Spice Spruce Smythe Smith Smythe, who's the director of the UK March for Life, you know, a forced birth organization. And she told the cops, well, I was silently praying for the fetuses. And she was arrested, as she should have been. An officer walks up to her in the video and says, "Hi, love, why are you standing there?" That sounds Australian, doesn't it? Yeah, I'll stay away from the accents this evening. And she says she's there because of the clinic. And she says she's not part of any protest, except for the fact that she was conducting her own. The cop says, "Are you praying?" And she says, coyly, of course, "I might be praying in my head." And the cop says, "Well, will you come down to the station to answer a couple of questions?" And she said, "If I've got a choice, then no." And the cop says, "You're under arrest for suspicion of failing to comply with public spaces protection order." And then some Reverend Calvin Robinson said, "This is terrifying. What have we become? Under a conservative government, too." Oh. And then some asshole named Sohrab Ahmari, who is a Catholic author and the founder of Compact Magazine, said, "Oi, you got a license to pray in your head, man?" There, got my accent back. Yay. Another forced birther named Emily Rarick said, "This is absolute madness. How can someone be arrested for praying? Oh, honey, study the Reformation. People were arrested for all kinds of stuff and got a lot more than arrested." You know, Catholics like Sohrab Ahmari lopped the heads right off of Protestants. And Protestants lopped the heads off of Catholics. So it's really better that we just have no protest at all and people just shut their... mind their own damn business. And then some right-wing POS named Lauren Chen said, People are literally being arrested for thought crimes in the UK. Free speech is not a Western value. It's a uniquely American one. And then somebody who used to be an aide to Maggie Thatcher, that hateful old broad, said, "This is appalling. Disgraceful to see a woman arrested for simply praying on a British street. This should not be happening under conservative government, and action should be taken by the Home Secretary to ensure that scenes like this are not repeated." Well, maybe this allegedly Christian woman should read the words of her own avatar, who said, "If you need to pray, go into a closet, pray your little head off, and then come out and go about your business, and don't be like the Pharisees who pray loudly in the streets, for they have their reward." You know what? I bet that's not in the conservative Bible, is it? And then Nate Hockman over at the National Review. Remember, the National Review is the original home of American racism and white supremacy. "Sorry, but imagine not having a First Amendment." Right. Because the First Amendment is nothing more than a life support system for the religion industry now. Thanks for confirming that, Nate. The American disease spreads. Oh, well. No, she was not, Ralph. A uniquely American thing. Was she American? No, she wasn't. No. Odd, Leah New York points out, that there's still a buffer zone around the Supreme Court. Just wondering. Oh, yeah, they struck down the Massachusetts law that created the buffer zone, but they kept their own. It's like 60 feet or something ridiculous. Because, well, the Supreme Court are special. And they don't want to have their tender fifis hurt. As to Matt Gaetz needing help, Stephen New York said, "If Matt Gaetz needs help and I can offer food and water, I will not be like him and refuse to give food and water. I'll be sure to offer my shit and piss as his sustenance." Whoo! Somebody's in a state. Not gonna push back real hard on that, Steve. Earlier, yeah, I made a mistake last night. Dave and the Blind looked it up. John Wilkes Booth was born in Maryland, and Maryland was a border state with plenty of Confederate sympathies. Historically, here's Dave and the Blind. And, of course, he had a lot of sympathizers, but he did yell the Virginia state motto, "Sic Semper Tyrannis," when he leapt to the stage. So, let's see. There's just so much. This is a fun one. In a way, a judge down in Talabama in Blount County, I know where that is. I've been through there. I think the county seat is Blount Springs, B-L-O-U-N-T. Circuit judge there, Stephen D. King, no, not that Stephen King, has been suspended from the bench because apparently Stephen D. King decided that he was going to send anonymous letters to various news outlets about local political types there. The letters that Judge Stephen King sent questioned the fitness for office of a police officer and two county commissioners. And he sent around packages that included civil case filings and an audio recording of a conversation between the officer and Commissioner Dean Calvert, in which Calvert can be heard using a racial slur. The recording was part of a divorce case. So King wanted to make sure people knew about that, but he didn't quite have the courage of his convictions. At least not enough to put his name on them. Now, the judicial complaint said, although the conversation and comments captured in the recordings are reprehensible and offensive, Judge King's conduct of authorizing the anonymous letter, compiling the pleadings, constitutes impropriety or... Hey, look, there it is. We were talking about this just last night. The appearance of impropriety and is inappropriate for one that holds judicial office. And it would seem to be correct. It does create the appearance of impropriety. But, of course, so too does swanning around with a bunch of hard cases and dead enders at a Matt Schlapp and Mercedes Schlapp Christmas shindig, as Brett Kavanaugh did. But you see, in the state of Alabama, there is a court of the judiciary that handles ethics complaints against judges. We don't have, in the United States, on the federal level, we don't have anyone who investigates complaints of unethical behavior against members of the Supreme Court. So there's that. But let's not camp out on the corruption solely in Alabama. Let's check in Butler County, Ohio, where Roger Reynolds, who is the auditor of that county, who is, of course, a Republican, has been busted and convicted for felony public corruption. And according to Fox 19 there in the Buckeye State, Reynolds, 53, of Liberty Township, faces 6 to 18 months in jail. The jury deliberated all day before returning not guilty verdicts on the other four charges. One count of bribery, a third-degree felony, two counts of unlawful interest in a public contract, a fourth-degree felony, one count of unlawful use of authority, a first-degree misdemeanor, and a previous charge of misdemeanor campaign finance violations was also dismissed. But he is looking at 6 to 18 months in the stir for his felony public corruption. But he's a Republican in a red state, so one wonders if he'll do any time at all. The report said Reynolds was accused by the state of using his public office for personal gain for himself and his family. The charge he was convicted on relates to his proposal for Lakota local schools. He's kind of walking in the footsteps of his glorious leader. He wanted to use public money for the schools to build a golf academy on private property at something called Four Bridges Golf Course, you know, where he, Roger Reynolds, lives and holds a membership. So what it turned out was three developers testified against him. The former treasurer of Lakota Local Schools testified against him. But here's the punchline. The local Republican Party endorsed him for another term, even though he was under indictment. He was unopposed by any other Republicans in the primary and got reelected by a 2-to-1 margin in his maggoty district outside Cincinnati. If he steps down, the Butler County Republican Party will have to find a replacement, maybe somebody who can pick up the torch and see if they can't extend the graft and corruption there in Ohio. Note coming in from Matt in San Francisco, subject line Supremes. A couple of months back, they even had a new fence around the court. I couldn't spit that far, so I just took a picture. Yeah, they are special snowflakes. Scott in San Diego is telling me he's having a hard time clicking into the front porch group. I don't know if that's a technical thing or maybe something going on with your device or maybe the Wi-Fi there at the facility if you're on their Wi-Fi. I don't know. Well, I'm glad you're pondering the deep questions of our lives, Darlene. Darlene in Connecticut says, can a street be British? Like, I'm kissing Valentino by a crystal blue Italian stream. Can a stream be Italian per the Bangles in their 80s song Manic Monday? These are the deep questions I ponder daily. Well, we all need a hobby, Darlene. Crystal blue Italian, and the way they sing, a crystal blue Italian stream. You know, stretching out the second syllable. Didn't Prince write that lyric? Something makes me think Prince wrote that one. Same with Nothing Compares to You, that Sinead O'Connor. Became famous for. And meanwhile, a note from Elbert in Rhode Island. There's a weather station on top of Mount Washington, New Hampshire, 6,288 feet above sea level. I've bookmarked its website on my computer. It's 25.8 degrees Fahrenheit there. The wind speed is 69 miles an hour, so the wind chill temp is 3.1 degrees Fahrenheit. A recent wind gust reached 83 miles an hour, wind chill temp 1.64 degrees Fahrenheit. I enjoy checking on it on days like this. I wonder what it'll be later. That, you know, the so-called bomb cyclone roared in last night, and it really is. It's early for it to be this brutal here. And I've got one friend. I found out she safely made it to Chicago. Another friend is traveling from Chicago to Pittsburgh. And I'm hoping, if you have to be out on the road, please be extra careful and stay safe. Black ice is no fun. We just got a dusting of snow. Not much in the way of snow at all. But Lord God, the cold. I mean, that's my hands. I'm trying to keep them warm. Lee confirms what I had previously thought. Manic Monday was composed by Prince, signed Lee, not wearing a raspberry beret in New York City. Thank you to Roger in Ohio. Thank you, Roger, for getting us started on fundraising this evening. That means we're down to $290, and we're fully funded for the week. Thank you so much for your help. And the heater I don't know why the heater just went off. I mean, it's on a thermostat, but I can't believe that it reached its target goal. Not when the Seth Thomas clock says that it's up to 54 degrees in here. Everything's going to be just wonderful. Thanks. Brother Deacon Asa says the link should be up there on the front page at headon.live. It is, and Scott realized that he's a tad early jumping into the conversation. Okay, so Lee in New York is not wearing a raspberry beret, but Matt in San Francisco wants to know, but is he driving a little red Corvette? Yee-hee. Yeah. maybe it's much too fast. Right. And there's something kind of bittersweet yesterday. Nancy Pelosi gave her final press briefing as Speaker of the House. Got some of the audio.
Yes, ma'am.
Madam Speaker, thank you for your comments. I just want to ask you, in this time of transition, have you had any conversations with Leader McCarthy, or do you intend to? And if he prevails as Speaker, what advice would you give him?
Well, I don't think anybody needs any advice from anybody. You've heard me say, even about our own distinguished leadership, I'm not going to be the mother-in-law comes in and say, this is the way my son likes his turkey stuffing, his scrambled eggs, or anything else. They have to have their own vitality about it all, and they do. And so as far as he is concerned, we haven't had any formal conversations, but we interact. And I'm just hoping that on January 3rd, that they'll be expeditiously able to elect a speaker so that we can get on with the work.
I don't know how she said that with a straight face.
And just so you know, this may interest you. What I have said to everybody is the hardest thing that I had to do, since you're asking this question, I was Speaker and Minority Leader under President Bush, under President Obama, under what's his name? And it's just Speaker under President Biden, but three different presidents, two different roles. The hardest thing that I had to do in all of the, say, let's just talk about the hardest thing that I had to do, and I said this in friendship and in love and all the rest of that, is when we had a Democratic president and we were in the minority, and we were in the minority as minority leader to sustain a presidential veto. Because the Republicans would roll out stuff that sounded like a chocolate sundae, but it's more like doggy do. But it looked good, and it played well in districts, and people say, oh, this is good. No, it ain't good. It's terrible. It undermines the Affordable Care Act. We have to sustain the presidential veto. This is not a casual vote. This is not a casual vote. So I'd rather be writing the Affordable Care Act or any other massive legislation than to have to go to my members and say, my friend, in friendship, I really need your vote to sustain the president's veto. That was the hardest. Yes, ma'am.
Wow. Under what's his name? I was Speaker and Minority Leader under President Bush, under President Obama, under what's his name, and just Speaker under President Biden. What's his name? Oh, God, she's so good. I'm going to miss her so much. I know. She's not nearly ideologically pure enough. But damn, what a woman. What's his name? Ouch. It's good.
I know she knows my name. She knows my name. I told her my name. I got the best name. Only the best name. She knows it.
Sir, we know you know she knows your name. Everybody's very knowledgeable about your name, sir. Here's that bottle of ketchup you asked for. Oh, and now that the final report is out, turns out that Tangerine Tiberius wanted his own Praetorian cohort. And, well, on the evening of December 27th, according to the report, Nitwit Nero jumped on Twitter to say,
"See you in Washington, D.C. on January 6th. Don't miss it. Information to follow."
And according to the J6 committee, he sent that tweet out after he talked to someone by the name of Justin Caporale, who helped produce the Clavering rally at the Ellipse. That same evening, December 27th, Nitwit Nero sat down with a number one son, Trader Tot, and Kimberly Gargoyle. And they spoke, and she spoke with rally organizer Caroline Wren during the meal. So Kimberly Gargoyle was up to her beetling eyebrows in the terrorist attack, too. Maybe she can be indicted. That would be nice. One of those, beginning with, you know, the actual day of January 6th and going forward, Annette has forever stuck in her mind the visual of Kimberly Gargoyle going dancing through the party tent as whoever the DJ was blaring, of all things, Laura Branigan singing Gloria, which is not the same Gloria as, you know, Jimi Hendrix and others did. So, anyway, Caroline Wren sent Kimberly Gargoyle a bunch of talking points saying that the buses of people are coming in from all over the country to support you. It's going to be huge. We're also adding in programming the night of January 5th. And then there were a number of calls with the White House staff. And then by December 29th, they had solidified an idea, and Wren wrote to Caporale and said that after the speech on January 6th, maybe a call to action to march to the Capitol and make noise. So the plans for a march on the Capitol were launched, at least in part, from the White House. Then January 2nd, Katrina Pearson, one of the organizers of the terrorist attack, told Caroline Wren that Mark Meadows, there he is again, he does get around, said that Tangerine Tiberius was going to
call on everyone to march to the Capitol.
Inside the White House, according to the report, the president's intent was well known. Cassidy Hutchinson, an aide to Meadows, recalled in her testimony that she overheard discussions to this effect toward the end of December or early January. One such discussion included an exchange between Meadows and Rudy Giuliani that happened on January 2nd. Hutchinson understood that President Trump wanted to have a crowd at the Capitol in connection with what was happening inside, namely the certification of the electoral count. And then the conspiracy expanded. There was a call with members of the Freedom Caucus. The idea of telling people to go to the Capitol was discussed as a way to encourage Congress to delay the Electoral College certification and send it back to the states. Then 2 days later, on January the 4th, Kylie Creamer of Women for America First told Mr. Meth Pillow, Mike Lindell, "POTUS is going to have us march there, the Supreme Court, the Capitol, but emphasized that the plan stays only between us. The Stop the Steal assholes knew about it, too." By January 5th, Ali Alexander sent a text to one journalist saying, "Ellipse, then U.S. Capitol. Trump is supposed to order us to the Capitol at the end of his speech, but we'll see." And then, according to Katrina Pearson, Trump was saying,
"Well, I should work with the people."
She, at the time, did not take him seriously. Senior advisor Max Miller shot it down immediately. because there were worries about his safety. And Katrina Pearson agreed, but Nitwit Nero was still absolutely hell-bent on doing it. And that's when he said,
you know what? We'll just get 10,000 National Guardsmen to protect me and all of my supporters from any possible threats by left-wing counter-protesters. You know, those BLMs and those Antifas.
You know, who weren't there. So then Max Miller said, nah, we don't need the National Guard for the event. According to the report, Miller testified there was no further conversation on the matter. And then Miller texted Pearson saying, just glad we killed the National Guard in a procession. That is, President Trump briefly considered having the National Guard oversee his procession to the U.S. Capitol. Wouldn't that have been a sight to behold? Or wouldn't that have been a putsch to behold? Sending federalized National Guardsmen to march on the capital of the United States of America. So since there were only, according to Defense Secretary Mark Esper at the time, there were only about 1,200 Guard soldiers in D.C., so he would have had to call up the Guard from maggot states. I'm sure that maybe South Carolina would have been compliant. Alabama, Mississippi, Stan. Yeah. Then, you'll find this at Appendix 2 on page 742, a comment that Mark Meadows sent an email on January 5th. Mark Meadows said the D.C. National Guard would be on hand to protect pro-Trump people. We got closer than we even remotely know. And along those lines, this came from Vice News. Further confirmation of the testimony that we heard earlier in the year. Capitol rioters were armed to the teeth and ready for war. Nitwit Nero being quoted,
I don't fucking care they have weapons. They're not here to hurt me.
As we talked about a couple of nights ago, hundreds of knives, clubs, various weapons were confiscated via the magnetometers at the Ellipse. Nitwit Nero didn't want the magnetometers there. He wanted them armed to the teeth. He was planning on a full-scale terrorist attack on the capital of the United States. It was Tony Honorato, the Secret Service Deputy Chief of Staff for Ops, who said that, told Nitwit Nero, there are people there that won't come through the magnetometer because they have weapons that they don't want confiscated by the Secret Service. And that's when Nitwit Nero said,
I don't fucking care that they have weapons. They're not here to hurt me. They can march to the Capitol from here.
He was described as effing furious, but the magnetometer stayed up. And of that list of 269 knives or blades, 18 brass knuckles, 18 tasers, 6 pieces of body armor, 3 gas masks, 30 batons or blunt instruments, and 17 miscellaneous items like scissors, needles, or screwdrivers, these were confiscated from the 28,000 people who went through the magnetometers. 28,000. There's a commentary hiding in there somewhere. Namely, the fact that there were 28,000 people willing to engage in insurrection and terrorist activity against the Constitution of the United States and the government created thereby, 28,000 of them, and not even 1,000 of them have been charged. 27,000 insurrectionists will walk. And this is why I said at the very beginning of all this, almost two years ago now, there needed to be a special prosecutor, fully staffed, whose only job was to protect, was to prosecute every single one of these godforsaken maggots who showed up and in any wise supported this terrorist attack on our government, on our civil society. The report contains the quote, the mob President Trump summoned to Washington, D.C. on January 6th was prepared to fight. There was Marc-Andre Mazza, drove to D.C. from Tallahassee, brought a .45 caliber pistol to the insurrection. He went on to assault a police officer, but in the fray, somehow or another, he managed to lose his pistol. Speaking to investigators later, Mazza said that he was looking for Nancy Pelosi, and that investigators would be here for a different reason, his words, if he had found her. He got 60 months for assaulting a police officer and carrying a pistol without a license. 60 months. That's just 5 years. Just 5 years. For treason. The Oath Keepers, their founder, Stuart, you'll shoot your eye out, kid, Rhodes. Well, He told his Oath Keepers that D.C. law said they couldn't have a blade longer than 3 inches, and said, "Y'all keep the knives low profile, will ya?" But they had weapons stored in cars, a full-on arsenal over in the vaguely general, you know, Crystal City, Roslyn area of Northern Virginia. The California Patriots DC Brigade went back and forth messaging, talking about bringing hatchets, bats, metal flashlights, maybe even firearms. They said, "We need to be ready and willing to fight like 1776. Another one of the groups of the Free Percenters, the Florida Guardians of Freedom, they circulated a call to action, a call to arms, responding to the call from President Donald J. Trump to assist in the security, protection, and support of the people as we all protest the fraudulent election and reestablish liberty for our nation. Sit, liberty, sit. The guy who led this group of terrorists put up a safety video on Facebook. He said that D.C. law could be gotten around and they could carry an expandable metal baton, a walking cane, and a folding knife. Now, the thing is, it almost sounds like they had advanced knowledge that Capitol Police would never fire on them. Where could they have gotten such knowledge from? Who could have provided it? The committee's report also notes that at least three people brandished AR-15s right there in D.C. in front of police officers. The radio traffic was full of remarks of officers seeing people carrying weapons. One terrorist who came, of course, from Taliban had stashed a handgun, a rifle, a shotgun, hundreds of rounds of ammo, large-capacity magazines, machetes, smoke bombs, and the ingredients to make Molotov cocktails in his car, which was parked by the Capitol building. Even after the fact, this stuff is terrifying to read. They fully intended to overturn the Constitution, to overturn the government. And the best we can manage to give them is 5 years in prison or maybe 10 tops. You realize, of course, that if Nitwit Nero is prosecuted, if he is convicted, he will still never see the inside of a jail or die there, as would be just. Over at Donald.win, the maggots went so far as to talk about cutting off access to the tunnels under the Capitol. And, well, that's, I guess, where the idea for the gallows came from. Putting a gallows up, quote, so the traitors know the stakes. Another poster put up a graphic that showed how to tie a hangman's noose.
Let's construct a gallows outside the Capitol building next Wednesday so the congressmen watching from their office windows shit their pants.
And it all stemmed directly from the then sitting president of the United States of America. And here's the question. How does Jack Smith or Merrick Garland look at all of this and go, let's give him a pass, shall we? Yeah. Catching up with some email, Lee in New York said, no little red Corvette for me, but the minivan is in the garage. Of course it's a minivan. And, Darlene in Connecticut says, not wearing a raspberry beret while driving a little red Corvette in the purple rain? No, I guess not. Matt in San Francisco adds, subject line speaker, we San Franciscans love our shade. Well, she has learned and learned well. I was speaker or minority leader under Bush, Obama, what's his name? I don't know which I like better, what's his name or the former guy? Both, stoke the stroke, Nancy, stoke the stroke. To Donald T, re Nancy P, hey, stupid, I know you think you understood what she said, but what you heard is not what she meant. That from Scott in San Diego. So we have made it to the top of the hour. I almost have feeling in my extremities. Every now and then I reach my hand down here to the little portable propane heater. I hope I don't melt my nails off. I'll know I'm in trouble if the gel polish starts bubbling. It is Friday on the front porch, and I'm eager to get to the conversation. Let's see. And we'll see what's going on across over the river and through the woods to the old holler tree where we sublet that we sublet from the Keebler Elves, wherein we keep the extraordinary ordinary round table. gather about it every Friday. For some reason or another, this thing's... All right. There we are. I think I'm in. Let's see. All right, hey. Am I connected? I tried to connect, and then it didn't connect, and then I jumped in. Am I there?
You are connected.
Yay, thank you. Hey, Sparky. What?
I don't know what that was.
Nor do I.
Sounded like the damn dog that almost attacked me last night.
Oh, yeah, okay, that's a Santa ho-ho-ho. I got it. So you're all set to have your well drilled on Tuesday, are you, Sparky?
Yeah.
Excellent.
As long as they get a copy of the permit. I get a copy of the permit in the mail, but the county promised me the other day. I had to go run around to the county the other day to get the permit. Got to go to the basement of the old courthouse, the environmental health or whatever. They pull out a plot plan, big sheet of paper. They said, okay, you got to go up to the planning department or the other place to get a building permit. They go up there. First place charged me $101 for the permit, $70. Then they go back downstairs to environmental health, and they charged me $240. And then, estimating just by the other wells they drilled that the drillers told me about, it's going to cost me over $11,000.
Holy cow! So, when they drill, I don't know if it's what it's like there, but is this they drill until they hit water and then you have to pay if you want to go deeper?
More than likely. I don't know, my neighbor's well that I've been running off of.
Yeah.
It was put in to a depth of 140 feet. And her pump, they hung it at 100 feet because I was there watching them. So it's going to be over 100 feet. And they charged $75 a foot.
That's pricey.
Well, the other guys charge even more. Every well driller in the North State is busy drilling wells somewhere. Like I told you before, you couldn't even get a live person on the phone in most of these places. And then people all over town, when I talked about it, said, well, they're booked up for 8 months to a year. I've been out water for a year and a half.
So, if you know this, has the depth of the water veins changed with ongoing drought or drop in the water table?
Yes, because we're not getting the same amount of rain we used to get every year.
Right.
And the snowpack.
Speaking of which, I know it's the eastern half of the United States that's getting hammered right now. What's it like where you are? Give me some good news. I can't feel my feet.
Well, it's like 55 degrees today. In the mornings, lately it's been around 40. We had a little cold snap here a couple days ago. It was down to 29 in the morning. And then we got two foggy mornings.
Yeah, I was just before airtime. I was looking at
the rain next week. You believe? Because the welder was telling me that. I could ask Alexa, but I don't think she does 10-day forecast. I get a weather report from her every morning when I get up and ask her. ask her what the temperature is and what's the weather today.
Well, it is officially 1 below right now here in the hills and hollers. The overnight low is 4 below. We'll get up to 14 tomorrow, sunny and 22 on Christmas Day. That's so wild, though, because, you know, Christmas Day a year ago, Annette and I were on the road home from Alabama. And when we left Florence, Alabama on Christmas morning, it was 72 degrees. Positively toasty. Well, right now, down in Florence, it's 11. And their overnight low is 2 degrees warmer, if you can even use that word, than what we have here. Their overnight low is 1.
Yeah, I heard about that last night from Gary in Alabama in the Discord group.
Yeah, this is nasty. And
it's
let's see.
Shit in Texas, too.
We don't get above freezing until perhaps Thursday. The overnight low is 34. This is, and beyond just simply talking about the weather, this shit is dangerous. I was thinking before showtime about something that happened way, way, way back when I was still doing radio in America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley. And I had the story of a gas company worker who, at the behest of the gas company, in the midst of brutal cold like this, came and turned off the gas to a household that had a newborn in it and froze the newborn to death. And I remember how furious I was. And it just, it brought it all back. I mean, because, and no one was charged, okay? That should have been at least negligent homicide. But nope. And that's, and you know, that's part of why I've been so desperate to make sure that we get the power bill paid here, because Junie doesn't qualify as a newborn anymore. She's 6 months old. But that's just, that's, it's intolerable to me.
Well, I'm burning oak firewood in the fireplace next year. The thermostat in the living room says 80 degrees.
See, you know, we talk about a lot of, barbecue stuff during the course of the program. But one of the nice things, I've never been a big fan of mesquite, but the one thing about mesquite is that wood burns hot. Hotter than just about anything else, according to what I've read.
So does manzanita.
I wonder if they're kin.
I don't know, but manzanita grows all over the place out here. A lot of these fires, big patches of manzanita that burn.
So you've got, is it a fireplace insert?
Yes. When my parents bought this house in 1963, it had a fireplace. We had the glass doors on it and everything. Well, after my dad built the shop, it's out back, man cave. You know, that used to be a welding shop.
Right.
Yeah, Dad was able to do it. I mean, for him, he worked professionally as a welder in the pile driver machine. But anyway, he made the fireplace insert that's in this house out there in that shop.
How often do you have to clear out the soot and so forth?
I had the whole thing redone last year.
Oh, so you're in good shape.
My minion, he came over and inspected. I had cleaning off my roof, because I don't get up on the roof anymore. So he decides to look at the fireplace chamber that was up there. It's a big picture of it. You need to hire a chimney sweep. So I went and got a chimney sweep, and then I got the bad news. Fireplace, you need a total top job with the mortar inside of it to get prepared, because there's no top cover on the chimney like they put on now. All the years of the rain getting in it, it cracked all the mortar in the fireplace block. They put in the big round oblong blocks that stack together. They form just like, I don't know, any kind of breaker or whatever, but they're made to stack under high temperature or resistant. I mean, and you mop the whole thing and fire the mortar. Anyway, he had to fix that. Came one time, and then when he showed me pictures and stuff, and then he said, so I just went ahead and did it. So the whole thing cost me about $2,000.
Yeah, but that's an investment, right?
Yeah, investment that I'll never see any money out of. And I'll sell whenever. I'm living in this house until I'm gone. And I don't have any heirs. So I have nobody to know nothing.
Well, you know, the bottom line is being able to stay warm.
Yeah.
And that's where, that's at the top of my thoughts right now. We've made it, by the way, here in the studio, we've made it all the way up to 54.5 degrees.
The fireplace has a blower system on it. It blows air around the inner chamber. Comes out the top of the insert, and it's got steel fins on top of the firebox that transfer the heat and blow the air through that. It goes across those fins and it blows out the front with heated air. And then I got to try and get it down the hall to the master bedroom where I sleep now, so I've got a regular freestanding fan that blows the heat, comes out of that insert towards the hall and goes down the hall. Heats it up to, like, the hall's about 76 degrees right now. Because that's where the furnace is that I don't use. I can get out and give PG&E a bunch of money, I'll do it.
Any penny that you don't give to PG&E is a freaking win, isn't it?
Yeah, for gas, because my gas bill during the is all I got is a gas water heater. So the gas bill is real low. But as soon as I try to run that furnace, then the gas bill shoots way up.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that was like Matt writing in, what, earlier this week or last week, talking about his $5 PG&E bill because of solar.
Yeah, well, when I was in the building department the other days, I overheard this young couple. They had some property or something, and they were asking the building department what the requirements were to build a brand new house. And so the gal had a lot of requirements. And any new house built in California has to have solar. If you put a mobile home or a become modular home, no, you don't have to do it. But a permanent house, structure, or anything, you got to put solar in. They passed that.
No, it's the future. It's absolutely the future.
Yeah, I remember when it came out, so any house I built after 2020 had to have solar on the roof.
Well, our buddy Tom in sunny San Rafael said, 53 degrees out on my bike ride with scattered high clouds, been down in the mid-30s overnight. 53 would be positively tropical right now here. Enjoy the bike ride. Thanks, Tom. And 54.5 degrees, Lee in New York says, are you doing numbers again? Yeah, I'm dosed to the eyeballs on numbers this evening instead of caffeine, Lee.
At least nobody wants you to convert to Celsius.
Yeah, I couldn't do that. Ferg and I had to make a run to the store earlier, and I tried that joke out on him as we were walking out on Kroger's. I said, thank God we're not on the metric system. It'd be so much colder today, like minus 20 or something. For my trouble, I got, shut up, Dad. That's not even funny. And non-billable Rick, subject line cold. Since Monday, the high here in eastern Washington has been 4 degrees. The low of 8 below, with a wind chill of 24 below and 10 inches of snow. Oof. This feels about as cold as it's been since like the winter of 2014 here when we had the Freedom disaster. God, I hope we don't have another one of those. But it's always a possibility. Well, let's bounce around the room a little bit and see who's round and about.
Hey, Robin.
Hey, Scott.
Sorry about all the confusion. I know what time I thought it was, but I rushed back to the room after physical therapy, which they say I'm doing better at every day, which is a good thing.
Yay.
And I rushed back and said, well, let me get the phone set up so I can call in for the porch. And it's like 20 after 2 or something my time. For some reason, I thought you started at 1 my time. And like an hour, I must be in the wrong time zone. I don't know what the deal is.
I don't know. Maybe if you were bobbing along somewhere out in the Pacific, maybe.
Yeah, Guam or somewhere out there. Ultra Pacific time.
Nah, if it was Guam, it'd be tomorrow.
Pago time. Yeah. Well, they always say today is the tomorrow you worried about yesterday, so.
You know, some of it may be that phenomenon that happens when you've been in a healthcare facility for a while. You kind of lose track.
Yeah, the other day I had no freaking idea what day it was. Absolutely none in the world. And I haven't been watching TV since I've been here. I usually listen to the, you know, CNN or MSNBC audio on the phone on TuneIn or whatever that thing is. I have no idea what's going on in the world, by and large.
No different.
And they're giving me primo meds, which is nice. And maybe that's the problem.
Gotta be.
There was after the physical therapy, there was a little Christmas gathering on the patio. Outside, outdoors and stuff, but I just wasn't up for it. Last night, you know that expression, he or she slept fitfully?
Yes, fitfully.
Well, that was me.
I always wondered, does that mean you had fits in your sleep?
The non-sleep apparently was giving me fits, but I don't know. One good thing is there's a certain amount of regimentation, you know, and the meals are at a certain time. Everything happens at a certain time.
The Brussels sprouts are always mushy.
I'm way more laid back than that as a general rule. So.
Well, if you're there long enough, I'd kind of like to know if that's what they do to the Brussels sprouts. What do they do to the asparagus?
Well, I haven't had those yet. Haven't had those yet. People complain about, you know, hospital food, and I'm not saying that it's five-star quality or anything, but, I mean, by and large, there's only one thing I turned my nose up to a week or so ago, and I don't even remember what that was.
Rutabagas?
No, I'm sure it wasn't that. Those are those things that look like stalks, but they're like red. Is that right? Or am I?
No, that's rhubarb.
Rhubarb. Well, what are rutabagas?
Rutabagas are like gigantic, humongous, really dense, heavy turnips, and they're usually coated in wax. And you have to peel them and then cube. I love them. They're delicious.
I don't believe I've ever had some.
Rutabagas have a little bit more sweetness to them. They have a sort of golden color, and, you know, you season them upright, you know, you can boil them, bake them, you know, what have you. It's a root vegetable, and they're really good. I haven't had any in forever.
I think the first car I remember my family having when I was 4 or 5 was a rutabaga.
Yeah, I was about to say, yeah. It's, yeah, it was a 53 rutabaga.
I think it was 53. Anyway, I'm reclining. I've got the bed here. The head goes up or the feet go up. I've got the feet up because they want me to keep those, elevated because of the swelling. The compression socks are working out okay. So how's everybody else? I feel like I have been a stranger.
I'm fan-fucking-tastic. Hey,
are you now?
Scott, you're getting a question from Steve in New York?
Yes, yeah. Steve in New York.
I was hearing what you were saying about your the bed, the reclining, blah, 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 blah. And I was just going to say, it sounds like there needs to be a shout-out to Art Linkletter.
Say it again? A shout-out to...
Art Linkletter.
Art Linkletter.
Oh, yeah.
Rick Stack. Rick,
was that the Craftmatic that he used to have?
No, the Art Linkletter was that chair that, like...
Yeah, the stair chair.
Stair chair.
As I mentioned before, it was Art Linkletter, it was Edward G. Robinson.
You know, the weird thing is about him, I don't know how much you know about Linkletter. On TV, he seems so kind and genial and stuff. But I've read in various places that he was quite the unpleasant fellow in real life. And richer than Midas.
Well, anybody who would lend their name to that chair, I would expect to be a really nasty, horrible person.
But yes, it is true. Billable Rick has his hand up. Hey, Billable.
Hey, what's going on, everybody?
It's you, man, and your connection seems to be working.
Well, you know why? I'm not at the office. I'm at home with COVID.
No.
Yes. Yeah. Tested myself. I had a slight fever in the early evening last night. Came home or came back to Stars. Tested myself. I was positive. This all started. We had a Christmas party like 10 days ago on a couple of Mondays ago. And somebody at the party was obviously positive. And Star noticed symptoms a day later, roughly Tuesday evening. We were all together for probably 3 hours in a small room. So a lot of contact with, you know, with about maybe 15, 20 people. And so she got it and she started, she tested positive on Thursday night. Last Thursday night, I tested negative then, and I slept in the same bed, but with the window like wide open with a lot of air and not facing away from her. Managed not to get it on Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night. Tested negative on Monday morning. I thought, oh, I'm good. I'm cool. And there was another woman at the office who, on the same day that Star tested positive, wasn't feeling that well. I asked her if she had tested. She hadn't, and I suspect that she just didn't want to know. And so I don't think she ever did a test. And I probably got it from her. I just came down with it like yesterday. So I'm here at the office, and that's actually why, or not at the office. I'm at Star's house, just trying to isolate here. I haven't done any Christmas shopping. Haven't done jack shit. My son was flying down, or was to have flown down from Seattle, and stay at the house in L.A. And his flights all got canceled. So it's going to be a real shitty Christmas here, unfortunately. Sorry to, you know, be the effing ray of sunshine, but I guess I'm stealing your thunder, at least for this week, Robin.
Really? I mean,
I'm not feeling that bad. It's like a head cold for me, because I've been like vaxxed 4 times, you know. And this is my second time around with COVID. I'll be fine. I'll be fine. I just have to get a lot of rest, take it easy. I'm trying to. I had them deliver a laptop. Actually, Star's kid.
So I take it you will not be seeing Brian for Christmas. He'll be Christmasing by himself up in Seattle.
Yeah, he'll be up in Seattle. Yeah, his mother's disappointed. Everybody's, you know, disappointed, but that's just, the way it is. He'll be, stranded in Seattle, I guess, is the expression, right? Instead of sleepless in Seattle. So, it's one of those things. I guess it's my turn. Maybe I wasn't careful enough, you know?
They shut down the Seattle airport because of iced runways.
Yeah, but I haven't talked to Brian today, but the story is that he tried to drive to the airport. He had a 6 a.m. flight, supposedly. So he drove there like at 3 a.m., and it was, I guess, very harrowing. He's not – he grew up in L.A., so he doesn't know how to drive in snow and ice. And so I think he barely made it to the airport and got there and tried to talk to a customer service representative to get a different flight or whatever. I guess nothing happened. He was 3 hours and then turned around and went back home, is my understanding. So,
what a frustrating mess.
I know, no kidding. And well, I guess, you know, I wouldn't have been able to see him anyway because, you know, I would have COVID and I'd have to quarantine through Tuesday, and
right.
He would have been leaving on Monday, you know. He was going to just come for a long weekend, but you know, we'll manage something else, I imagine. I'll probably have to fly up there, and maybe we'll go skiing, you know, in Mount Rainier or whatever, or nearby, and, just see what we can make of it, you know?
Yeah.
But
it just sucks because Christmas or winter holidays.
Yeah, you know, that's the problem with winter holidays. It's like, they have them at the precise time when people should not be gathered together in big groups. I mean, the 2 times in the last year that I've been in big groups, I've gotten COVID. On New Year's Eve last year, I was like 1 month post-booster, or 1 week post-booster, and Star got it first, and then I got it maybe like 4 days later, 5 days later, you know? And then most recently after our office Christmas party. So it's almost like I just feel like, you know, in the future, no more big get-togethers for winter, you know, forget that, you know?
Yeah, that's why I was asking the question the other night that I asked. Even though the Biden administration is competent as compared to what we had before, with what I think is probably coming for us, I wonder if this country is even remotely intellectually and morally capable of doing what needs to be done.
You mean as far as being able to mask up again and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, even right? Something as simple as a mask.
Right. Yeah, I think
I wouldn't bet the rent money on it, Robin.
No, I would, and that's a grievously sad thing to believe, but I'm in the same corner with you, Scott.
No, the people are like obstinate as fuck. Okay, so there's that. There's the 2-year-old attitude. I don't want to, and you can't make me. And it's just, and we don't learn we don't learn from anything, even our own freaking experience. And I think this is going to be a horrendous winter, personally. Yeah. And this is the time of year when it really, which will probably start getting bad, because people are irresponsible. They won't even vote on behalf of their own lives.
Oh, and by the way, there's a new book coming out about the Biden administration. You know, we're far enough in that now we're going to get books. And you can just, you can count on, you know, breathless reporting from the various membership of the right-wing sewer. This story in the book in question, I'm trying to find the title of it now. There it is. It's called The Fight of His Life Inside Joe Biden's White House, and it describes him getting really upset about the immigration crisis at the southern border, and it says that
seriously.
I know, Steve. The book details a staff member describing a very upset Biden, more upset than most staff had ever seen him, yelling, cursing, and using F-bombs. The book also includes the detail that Biden would apologize for using the F-bombs when female staffers were present. So, you know, let the hand-wringing and the pearl-clutching begin, right, Steve?
You know, Robin, this is a game that they've been playing since the 90s. Okay, what they'll do, well, Chuck Grassley did it this time. They'll go do an op-ed, and it reaches all over. I mean, from Venezuela, all over, saying the border's wide open. Well, that hits people, and that tells them, you know, the border's open. Come and get it. And this is a game they've been playing with us since the 90s, man.
Well, yeah, there's that, but the other side of it is that there is a crisis at the border. And
well, there is, but they perpetuated. They created.
Precisely. It is a humanitarian crisis. You know, this cold is about to get as far south as, you know, El Paso. And there are people who have no place to stay. They are asylum seekers. They are officially asylum seekers. And they're stuck. And meanwhile, the Supreme Court's up there saying, well, you know, we think we're going to mess with Title 42, whatever.
It's like the Santa Claus thing, man.
The Republicans manufacture the crisis, and then the Republicans piss and moan about the crisis that they've manufactured.
Right.
And all of this comes as President Biden goes to Mexico the 9th and 10th of January for the North American Leaders Summit. And
Biden has been on record saying the border is not open, but that doesn't get blasted out. What gets blasted out is Chuck Grassley and his goons saying the border is now wide open. And they describe it.
And it sounds like that scene from World War Z, for God's sakes.
Yes, you get it. You're smart. You get it. Jesus Christ, I'm so sick of this game.
And, you know, the fact that there's any kind of crisis at the border is largely a manufactured one. American foreign policy relative to the country south of the Rio Grande is why we have it. You know, look at how immigration just went sky high after NAFTA. Because you've got people who have been, you know, farming the land for 1,000 years and more, 2,000, maybe 10. And suddenly they get uprooted because, you know, Great Big Corporation of America wants to build a plant down there because the environmental regulations are lax and they can pay people pissant pesos on the dollar to do jobs that people in the United States would actually want a living wage for.
These Republican ghouls, they are covertly encouraging these folks to come, knowing that, you know, it's going to blow up. They're ghouls, man. And they all have blood on their hands.
Steve,
every one of them.
One of the other problems with Mexico was that in the United States, we subsidized corn farmers. And when NAFTA came in, all of a sudden we could export corn to Mexico cheaper than those people that were farming the small family farms could make a living selling it to the corn tortilla producing factories or whatever.
Exactly.
And so all of a sudden they couldn't make enough money off their land to survive. They had to do something, and there wasn't anything in Mexico, so they decided to come north.
But Roger, I challenge you to go back and look through history. Whenever there's a Democratic president, within 2 years they start screaming this border crisis, and they scream it loud enough that it's heard through many continents. And these folks hear this and they take it to heart and they think, well, it's open season. We want to get the hell out of this third world country that we helped destroy, i.e. Venezuela and Nicaragua, et cetera, fill in the blank here. And they all start heading towards the border because the Republicans are dog whistling and telling them that it's wide open.
Well, I'm not denying that at all. I'm just saying there was this other one about family farm all of a sudden couldn't make it because of the cheap corn.
And you're spot on, too. I mean, it all goes hand in glove.
Yeah. It's a combination of being fucked over by Republicans.
Oh, sure. Sure. And then they try to paint it as, you know, we're just letting all these illegals in for the fentanyl and for the vote. We want their vote. So much bullshit. And they're all ghouls because innocent people, good people that want nothing more than a better lives for themselves are going to die. They're going to get hurt.
And it was Ronnie Reagan that brought a whole lot of people in and legalized them all. If you get down to it.
And we destabilized their government. Oh, Ronnie Reagan did. And it's been chaotic ever since.
Yeah. Salvador and death squads, anybody? Bishop Romero?
Thank you, Robin. Thank you. You cannot blame these folks. And we need the work right now. Let them in. Let them in.
Steve, it's never been an illegal immigration problem. It's always been an illegal employer problem.
Precisely. Precisely, Christopher.
An illegal employer problem. We have a flashing, as far as since I was a little boy, we've had nothing but a huge 2,000 mile long flashing neon help wanted sign at the border.
But do you get my point, Christopher?
Yes.
You think Florida's going to recover from those two hurricanes without immigrant labor?
Oh. Well, we can't even pick enough cabbage without immigrant labor. We need these folks.
Or tomatoes or almonds or anything.
Plane crashed at Los Gatos and the radio said they were just deportees. You know, this is nothing new. It's nothing new at all.
Nothing new. But it's the same old. It's like
the same
said,
old story,
like,
man.
Just like the calendar turning, Republicans after the, you know, when the election swings back around, Bruga Bruga caravans, Bruga Bruga MS-13,
fentanyl, blah blah blah
blah blah, and they win elections.
Well, yeah, because they got these people that are not juiced in. They don't know. Because you could turn on Washington Journal any day, and you can hear them. The border.
It's not just the border, though. Another aspect of it is there's a certain strata of American society and different societies around the world where they look upon another strata, where there are more of them, as just totally expendable, just like peons or pawns on a chessboard, and they don't care about it's like the I've Got Mine Club and screw all the rest of you all, and it's been like that for ages. But back in the 40s, I think California was dealing with what to do with migrant workers. Now, how long ago was that? That's 70 some years ago.
Well, one of the things about the migrant workers back in those days is they'd come over, they'd pick the crops, and then they'd go home.
Well, back then there might have been something more to go back to when you consider the conditions in a lot of these Mexican and Central American places. They, you know, anything would be a step up, you know?
And Scott, I challenge anybody to fact check me on this. You go and you look, anytime there's a Democratic president, check and see what happens. Within 2 years, the Republicans, they always blow their dog whistle saying, the borders are open. The borders are open. My God, the borders are open. And it resonates. These folks hear this all the way from Cuba to Venezuela. And they come because they want to better themselves. And this has been going on since the 90s. I challenge anybody that can hear me, my voice, check me on this, please.
Well, what I was going to say, you know, one of the things that Roger said kind of triggered it for me. If we were seriously concerned about looking at and dealing with and resolving the problem once and for all as best we were able to do, we would have done it by now. But that when you're dealing with a certain strata who has below it, many steps below it, a larger strata that they view as expendable and somehow less than human, you're not going to get any meaningful change occurring.
Well, it's kind of like one of those laws that the late, great Bart Kopp promulgated when he said, when a wealthy person makes a mistake and it makes the wealthy person a lot of money, look for that wealthy person to make that mistake over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Debt, you know, Milton Friedman at the University of Chicago said, you know, a desperate worker makes for a happy capitalist. I'm paraphrasing.
I remember that
Greenspan say there's a certain requirement in our economy to have a certain amount of desperation for the worker, I think Greenspan said something to that effect.
Economic anxiety. When those attitudes are built into the fabric of the way things are done, it's no wonder nothing ever gets better.
Yeah, for sure.
Same reason why unions raise all votes.
Exactly.
Sure. Yes, Mark.
And, you know, you talk about, you know, the 1940s in California, you know, you're talking about the era of the rise of Cesar Chavez. And giving migrant Cesar workers Chavez something resembling a voice.
Cesar Chavez was the 60s.
Yeah, I know, but I said the circumstances, the 40s gave rise to Cesar Chavez.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm getting some mail in, just sort of a weather check-in. Gary says it's supposed to get above zero here in Illinois tomorrow. Yay! And
I'm not there anymore.
Yeah, Don in West Tennessee says it's 6 degrees here. I know where Don is. But I can't stop thinking about our brethren in Ukraine. Our experience is a farce comparatively. I can only imagine what they're experiencing just to catch just a wisp of some kind of warmth. Yeah, everything that's happening in Ukraine, up including but not limited to the attacks on the civilian infrastructure, is nothing short of a crime against humanity. And Putin should be in the dock for it. And I don't feel at all hypocritical about this because 20 years ago, I was saying that George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, before he dicks you, should, and the rest of that filthy crew, that they should have been in the dock in The Hague. So I'm on solid ground as far as that's concerned. I mean, I'm sorry there are some people on on the way out there, our side of the political aisle, who think that Pooty is their, you know, Daddy Pooty, Daddy Vladdy. He's a monster. He's a maniac. And
he's a religious fanatic, Robin.
No, I don't think he's religious at all. I mean, he's a
he's an old school
KGB spook. He's atheist as fuck, I'm sure, but he understood that he had to play footsie with the Russian Orthodox Church in order to consolidate power. It's
would you say his hatred for the LGBTQ plus community is real?
Yes
or no?
Yes.
Well, okay, that is. But it's not rooted in his religious beliefs, you don't think?
No. No, Soviet so-called communism preached the gender equality between men and women, but there was no room for There was no room for anything but heteronormative sexuality, and certainly no room for gender exploration.
So his speech about that horseshit with the prince that was baptized in the Kiev. What's the river that runs through Kiev? 930 some shit. That was just again a dog whistle to the Orthodox.
Yeah, I mean, they're in a symbiotic relationship. They're in the same relationship as the,
crazy fuckers here. Yeah.
Well, there's the shark and there's the remora that rides on its back.
Yeah.
And they both manage to exist, because of and for the sake of each other. Oh, and by the way, Lady B tells me it's 9 degrees in Colorado Springs. Holy shit, Lady B. It is, and it's offensive to even use the word warmer in this context, but you are 10 degrees warmer in Colorado Springs than I am sitting here in the hills and hollers of almost level west by cold Manchinia. That's a hell of a note.
17 degrees in the North Georgia mountains, Robin, with 40 miles per hour wind gusts.
Jesus, Steve.
There, with all of this going on weather-wise, dare I even utter the current temperature where I am?
No.
You can. It's okay.
Because
it's going to be 67 by Tuesday. I mean, and of course, some goon called Washington Journal today. Yesterday and said, oh, global warming, it's way below zero down there in the south. And some lady called behind him and said, look, I want to explain to you, it's not global warming, it's extreme weather events, and that's what we're having, you know,
which are predicted under the climate change models.
Exactly. But you know, like the guy that took the snowball out on the Senate floor.
Jim Pissquick Inhofe.
Yeah.
Well, me and Roger are experiencing a balmy 28.
Oh, I'm jealous.
Well, I'm a little warmer than that here.
Cold for,
even in
it?
Baltimore standards, Chris, goddamn, it's cold.
It's cold for Oregon. What is it by
Roger? The icicles hanging off. 17 degrees. The icicles hanging off my porch have
cold
water dripping off of them.
Well, the headline I saw on the website for the paper today was balm cyclone. Now, what the hell is that?
Yeah, that's just that. Look, nerdy meteorologists like to come up with things that they can make headlines out of, and the people who promulgate clickbait are like, a bomb cyclone? Really? Bomb cyclone? It's right up there with blood moon. Okay, please.
The polar vortex had a baby. That's what it is, guys.
And they named it Rock and Roll. Jesus. It's the jet stream dropping extremely south.
Well, the other night on the news, last night I guess it was, I did hear the news anyway, down in El Paso, they were giving out soup to people, and the guy sat down his little cauldron of soup, and then when he picked it up, it had frozen. So it must be awfully cold.
Yeah, I wonder, it makes me wonder if Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, is in Cancun yet.
He's gotta be.
Well, he usually goes about this time of year, doesn't he, when it's time to figure out the budget or the keep the government
when
from
the power
defaulting.
Goes out in the entire state of Texas.
But only one, his daughter wants to go, and I think she's...
Oh, they've got
to go anywhere with him anymore.
Yeah, they've got. I'm sure they've got they've got their daughter locked down so far in some sort of godforsaken conversion therapy shithole that we won't hear from her until she's 30. Assuming, of course, she makes it there, and I hope she does. My heart just breaks for that child. Note coming in from Jude.
Be like Brittany.
Well, yeah, kind, yeah, only... note coming in from Jude. A gift. What a gift, Jude says. Received on this end from all of your voices on air. And especially a comforting one to me, for me, Robin, is that I've met in person three voices tonight. You, Chris, and Billable. You've also met Steve. Steve from Georgistan, Jude. So that's four. As far as our weather here and Brian unable to journey home, I'll call him again, inviting him to our home tomorrow on the eve. We're a small group, and we'll be bringing to the day Brennan, my grandson, who died in a hit-and-run less than a month ago. It shifted into the healing of my family. Go figure this, dear ones. Peace on earth. Peace on earth. Peace to you, dear Jude. And it's always worth remembering this time of year that that verse is mistranslated. In Luke, peace on earth, goodwill toward men. Ha-ha, that ain't what it says. It is peace on earth to men of goodwill. Yeah. I don't want any peace on earth for Vladdy Daddy.
He needs to go to the Hague.
Why should a fascist piece of shit like that woman in Italy have peace on earth? Fascists don't deserve peace. No.
Putin needs to go to hell, not to the Hague, Christopher.
Oh, well played, Billable.
Well, on the way, yeah. He could yeah, take the Milosevic route to hell. That would
be my way of yeah.
Yes, exactly.
He died in a cell, if I recall, didn't he? At the Hague.
He did.
Yeah, he did. I don't think his trial was even completed. He died while his trial was going on, I think. Somebody could check me on that, but that's my recollection anyway. Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, since we're almost 2 hours done with the program, we came into this with 315 to raise. Not, I mean, just a bit, I mean, that's tiny compared to what we're usually facing. But again, desperately trying to scrounge together enough to pay the power bill come Monday, and then the water bill's breathing down my neck. But thank you to Ralphs. Ralphs jumped in right behind Roger there in Ohio. And so we're down to $265. We got $265 to absolutely be fully funded through 3 weeks of December 2022. And that's a very big deal. And thank you to everybody who's been such a help recently. We might actually finish 2022 fully funded, and that would be, well, more than I would dare dream of the way things have run over the last few months. But if we could raise $265, we'll be there, and it'll be fantastic. And then, you know, come Monday, we'll have a Boxing Day program. Okay. Sorry to jump in like that, but.
Hey, Robin, may I say something about Jude?
Yes, please.
What a wonderful and generous spirit she is. I mean, you know, with everything else seemingly going wrong between the airport getting shut down in Seattle, me coming down with COVID, wouldn't be able to see him anyway. She's opening up her home to Brian. I mean, that's just so lovely. I hope Brian is outgoing enough to take her up on the offer. You know, because he is a little bit on the shy side, as you all have found out in the past, or as I've told you in the past. But he's actually met Jude, and he's met Jude's nephew, Bill. And we ate pizza, played pool, you know, that kind of thing.
Hey, Asa was there too, right?
With Brother Deacon as well.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun. We had a good time.
I saw the pictures. They were great, Billable.
Yeah. Brian had a good time. So, I'm just so
and
grateful.
Jude told me she had such an amazing time.
Well, Jude is relentlessly positive.
Yes.
No, and it's not just way, it's not just a Christmas spirit thing. You know, Jude is one of those people who lives it 365 days a year.
Okay. You got that right.
Yep.
And us listening, so Jude, please blush as much as you possibly can. Okay.
Yeah. Exactly.
Rick, do you know? Do you got that XBB variant? That thing going around is. It can skate by past immunity. I mean, it can skate by vaccines, past infections. I mean, Karen and I started wearing masks again today, and I hate the damn things, but I don't want to get sick, you know?
You've seen a lot more masks around, for sure.
You know, I don't know what variant I have. All I know is I tested positive for a, you know, the current, you know, the antigen test, so I have an active infection right now.
Yep.
I think my symptoms started yesterday, so I think I have till – I think I'll be in the clear by, like, Tuesday night or something like that.
Good,
that's how I calculate it.
Yeah, so there's a progressive radio host, David Pakman. He got it, and he's fully vaxxed, probably like you are.
Yeah. I doubly boosted. I did a little cross-boosting. The most recent I got was the Moderna, Pfizer before then.
Or the BioValent, I got that one, and it doesn't matter. This XBB thing can get you no matter. So,
but yeah. Steve, the thing we have to reemphasize over and over and over again is even with that variant, if you get the current booster, the bivalent booster, it will keep your ass out of the hospital, if you get it.
And I was going to go there, Robin, and my point was wear a mask too. What's it going to hurt, man?
Yeah, it's a lot easier.
I hate these dickhead masks worse than anybody, but we started wearing them again, you know?
Right, and I mean, I know I've been kind of running around with my hair on fire over this, but again, we are talking about in China. We're talking about 233 million infections and 2 million dead.
Right. How many infections per hour? I heard some statistic that was just mind-blowing.
And the thing is, the vaccine stupid has reached China because even that government can't get their own citizens to take the vaccine.
Well, who is his name? The guy over in China said, "Fuck it, you want to get it, get it. I'm done trying."
That's Xi Jinping.
Ping said, you know, if you want to get it, you know, go ahead and get it. And now it's just exploding over there, which is going to create. More variants, and we're never going to be. Just get used to.
Yeah, we're back. We're back to Paul from Parts Unknown's, you know, virus lottery. That's 233 million virus tickets this year coming.
Good God.
Yeah, it's a terrible winter. I mean, unfortunately, fortunately, I'm. For me, it's pretty much just a moderate head cold. I wouldn't even say it's a severe head cold.
Well, thanks to the vaccines, Rick. I mean, props where they're due. Otherwise, you may be in the hospital if you were one of these maggots.
Well, and then there's the post-COVID business with the brain fog and all of that shit.
Yeah.
I mean, there's stuff that rides behind it. But you know, just to turn it back to China for a minute. You know, that country is so huge in terms of population. Again, 233 million infections isn't even a rounding error.
Right.
To their overall population, but I get the idea that the Chinese are kind of Malthusian about all of this. And it's like, we got 1.4 billion people here. We can lose a few. It wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
Call the herd, right?
Yeah, what they're concerned about is their labor supply. Because their economy only succeeds as long as they are... the primary source of slave labor for the rest of the world.
And that's going to spider out to us, too. The supply chain, everybody's going to call in sick. I mean, we won't be able to get our goods. We're going to the recession. I mean, we're going to have another inflation.
Our company has two factories in China. Yeah, we have two. And if that shit goes sideways, we had to close that plant when it first hit for like a month. You know, they closed for Chinese New Year for 2 weeks anyway, but they extended that another 2 weeks. And everybody's like, "Oh, what the hell's going on over there?" Well, we found out.
Chris, Bernie's right. We need to be more self-reliant. I mean,
yes.
China has become an unreliable supplier of goods to the world. We have to basically
absolutely.
We can't count on our own stuff.
But Rick, I'm
glad our own chips. Make
you don't
our own
sound like you're
panels.
Suffering. I'm glad you're okay, brother. You'll be
thanks.
Okay.
I'll be fine. I was fine last time as well. I probably didn't get enough sleep leading up to this, and maybe that suppressed my immune system.
But you're healthy. You exercise daily and all that crap too, and eat right, don't you?
But yeah, I usually do.
I know it may sound a little nutty, but I've referred to it a couple of times. For those who can, I really cannot recommend enough watching, especially the first couple or three episodes of the HBO miniseries Station 11. It's predicated upon a worldwide pandemic. And this one happens to be some sort of flu that's like super double plus deadly. Don't want to give anything away. But
Station
you get
11.
Station 11. Steve, it's brilliant. It's a little confusing, disorienting getting started. But it's fantastic. But what it shows in those first couple of episodes is a pandemic going worldwide, and it's chilling, kind of terrifying.
You think that's where we're at or where we're going?
Well, I mean, it's not as bad. What we're dealing with here is not as bad as the virus in Station 11, but the spread, and shelves emptying, and and the funny thing is, this came out. I was just beginning to heal from surgery, so I spent a lot of time watching a lot of stuff in the third week of November 2021.
Yeah, Robin, are you talking about the movie? There's a bunch of podcasts that accompany it too.
Oh yeah. I'm just talking about the show itself. It was based on a graphic novel.
All right.
Or based on a novel.
Thanks, ma'am. I'm always looking for something good to watch. It's in my watch list.
The acting is superb. The story, given the way it begins, the story is actually an uplifting story of the ability of humans to triumph over impossible circumstances.
This whole thing was predicted by a book by Paul and Ann Ehrlich called End of Affluence on Epidemic Densities of Population. And we've reached it.
Well, don't stop there, Roger. Keep going.
Oh, the thesis is that with the transportation ability that we have with modern aircraft, where somebody could leave Beijing, fly into London for a connecting flight, and then go to New York City and go through the airport and go to the train station and then go to somebody's house. And because our population density is so dense that a virus could be picked up by somebody, and before they ever got sick, they've infected a huge amount of the world. And there is no immunity to the disease, and all of a sudden you have a worldwide pandemic, and it's unstoppable. And that book came out in the late 60s, early 70s.
So it's not like we haven't been warned about this shit.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at this whole COVID-19 thing as confirmation of what was predicted in the book End of Affluence.
And it is a confirmation, I think, Roger, but it's also chilling, because as bad as COVID is, there is so much worse out there.
Oh my god.
I haven't made mention
Dark
of it, but
jungles, yes.
I haven't made, and one of the things that gets pointed out is the thawing of the permafrost. There was a story the other day about scientists reviving a 50,000-year-old virus. And then another story a couple of days ago that I saw that I wanted to, well, and this is the time. There is an outbreak of scarlet fever in both the United States and in especially the UK. And we know what scarlet fever is.
Yes.
It's one of the most pernicious effects of a staphylococcus infection gone wild.
Gone wild, yes. It's like a staph infection on steroids, yes.
And it can have horrible consequences. And the problem is, you've had people, you know, they detail the story of a kid who died, and they thought, well, you know, just
a one-off.
Yeah. And they gave him basic palliative treatment, and a couple of days later, the kid was dead. Because nobody really was... We thought, oh, well, you know, we never see that anymore. Well, welcome to now, and we do. But there was a medical establishment that was not trained, not well trained, in the diagnosis of it. And so apparently it's having a worse time in the UK than it is in the US because of trouble diagnosing it.
Well, it's been eradicated for so long, a lot of doctors could see it and not even know what the hell it was.
And that's exactly what happened to the kid who died.
Oh, it's tragic. Jesus Christ, man.
Hey, Roger?
Yeah?
That book by Paul Ehrlich, and is that his wife, Ann Ehrlich, or daughter?
Yes, wife.
Yeah. Was that like a follow-up book to his original in like 67, 68, The Population Bomb?
Yes.
Yeah. I read Population Bomb, but I haven't read the other one. What's it called again?
End of Affluence.
Yeah, I remember seeing it, but I never got around to reading it.
Oh, and hey, Christopher, thank you so much for getting us down to 2:45. Thank you so much. I really appreciate
it. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you.
You know, and he was pretty much on the right track with that first book, Population Bomb. And this was back over 50 years ago, 67, 68, talking about, I don't know, the carrying capacity of the Earth. You know, we probably can carry more than we currently do, but it's a matter of resources, not necessarily a matter of the number of people, and it's the equitable distribution and availability of the resources.
We produce enough food to feed everybody in the world right now.
Yeah.
Although the carbon footprint of creating that food creates a bit of a problem. But one of the major problems is that as the population is leaping up in leaps and bounds, we are covering over some of the most productive farmland in cities because the original residences were in the best place to grow food. And as the population increased, the food production gets shoved off to less desirable land, and the housing covers over the most desirable agricultural land. And there's no place better example than the Santa Clara Valley of California, which was a tremendous food-producing area that needed virtually zero irrigation. And now all that fruit production has been moved over to the Central Valley, which requires irrigation. And maybe I'm just an old fart and I'll be dead before it really hits the fan. But the other consolation I take out of this COVID number is that more idiots are dying of COVID than non-idiots. In other words, the people who have gotten vaccinated are keeping out of the hospital and they aren't dying. And the COVID idiots that refuse to wear masks and refuse to get vaccinated, they're the ones that are dying. So fuck them. Let them die.
I think I referred to that early on in this thing as the silver lining.
Yeah.
And I hate to put it that way, but, you know, it's like survival of the fittest or the smartest in this case.
If you take a map, if you take a map of what Roger just said and you superimpose, you know, the Trump voters, it's nearly identical. The amount of the people who are dying of COVID and with Trump voters, it's nearly identical maps.
You know, and I, along those lines, I also wondered aloud early on in this thing, or a third of the way through, you know, how is this going to affect the number of voters, us versus them types and smart versus dumb types, you know, in future election cycles?
I don't know if there was any data on that this past election, but it could have been the difference between, you know, us keeping the Senate
I've got an article exactly on that point right here. And hey, Steve, cool. Thank you to you and Miss Karen and little Cletus. Thank you.
Happy holidays, Robin.
Thank you so much. We're now down to 225, and we got about 45 minutes to make that. Thank you. Well, I wanted to. Annette found this and sent it along when she heard what we were talking about. It's from the Atlantic. Oh, I love you guys too. How many Republicans died because the GOP turned against vaccines? By Yasmin Tayag. Party leaders are unquestionably complicit in the premature deaths of their own supporters.
Good.
She notes no country has a perfect COVID vaccination rate, even this far into the pandemic, but America's record is particularly dismal. About a third of Americans, more than 100 million people, have yet to even get the very first shot.
Mm-hmm.
The single group of adults most likely to be unvaccinated is Republicans. 37% of Republicans remain unvaccinated.
Yeah, my sister.
Only 9% of Democrats remain entirely unvaccinated. 14 of the 15 states with the lowest vaccination rates voted for Trump in 2020. The other of the 15th of the 15 states is, hi Steve, Georgia.
I can't believe it.
Big surprise.
Unvaccinated Americans are more likely to be Republican. Republicans in positions of power led the movement against COVID vaccination. Hundreds and thousands of unvaccinated Americans have died preventable deaths from the disease. And so it's hard not to reach the conclusion that the Republican Party itself is a vector of transmission for COVID.
But Mike's right. They're ghouls, man. They are.
Well, yeah, they are.
Off, and it's killed off their constituents.
They don't
and
care.
I know, then they
jammed through in this new budget bill that the military cannot force people to get vaccinated against COVID.
I know.
So here we are. We're sending troops overseas to countries that require vaccinations.
Yeah.
And they're not vaccinated. So we can't even send some of our troops overseas because they don't meet the admission requirements to get into the goddamn country. It's going to be interesting to see what happens when COVID hits an atomic submarine when they just start their mission.
But we saw it with a couple of the military ships, the aircraft carrier, right?
Yeah, there was an aircraft carrier that was out of commission for a while.
Yeah, it was a ship of the damned.
Well, and
I love it when you cackle, Steve.
Chris will probably
just a BTZ horror movie just went through my head when you said that.
Christopher will probably appreciate this. You know, I know with the exception of, say, Cook County or Chicago or the Philippines, generally speaking, the dead don't vote. Okay? And that's where
you left out Logan County, West Virginia.
Oh, Logan County.
The population of Logan County gets down to just two people, those two people will buy and sell their votes to each other.
What was that place down in Texas back in 1948 when LBJ won the Senate? on the basis of 13 votes. DuPage County, Duval County, somewhere down there. I don't know.
I grew up in DuPage, but that was Illinois.
Okay, well, I'm thinking of it. So I think it was Duval County down in D-U-V-A-L-L down in Texas back in 48. But, you know, they looked at the, you know, where you sign in when you vote. It was all done in the same pen and very similar handwriting styles. You know, Lennon was no fool. Come on.
Well, Scott, may I take this conversation in just a slightly different direction, lighten it up a little bit?
One other quick thing. Getting back to having brought this up about a third of the way through this thing earlier when it was just getting underway, that was a consideration that I had at the time, and I'm glad someone has put in a reputable magazine, you know, something, an article to quantify it. Because I wondered, seriously, what effect. It's going to have effects in many different ways, and that would be one of them. Who's around, upright, and above ground to vote?
Well, and exactly that, and we will go to the more fun direction, Steve, but that plays right into this article from The Atlantic. So some Yale researchers looked at data from Florida and Ohio before and after vaccines were available. Mm-hmm. Okay, before the vaccines were available, there was a 1.6 percentage point difference in the excess death rate between Republicans and Democrats. Republicans were 1.6% more likely to die than Democrats in Florida and Ohio. After the vaccines come out, holy crap, suddenly the excess death rate jumps to 10.4 percentage points, again, Republicans being the more having the greater excess deaths than Democrats. And one of the researchers said, when we compare individuals who are of the same age, who live in the same county, in the same month of the pandemic, there are differences correlated with your political party affiliation that emerge after vaccines are available. That's a statement we can confidently make based on the study, and we couldn't before. It is deadly to be a Republican. You know, long before COVID, holy cow, way before COVID, Malloy was saying it, I was saying it, the Republican Party is a death cult.
They're ghouls.
Well, even their own supporters, they consider them expendable and interchangeable and ignorable.
Call the herd, baby. Call the herd.
What do you think, Steve?
Even if it's their own herd.
What political party are you a member of?
But let me throw out there where I wanted to go real quick,
yeah,
and then
I'm
we
sorry.
Can bounce back
go
to
ahead.
This. No,
go
it's,
ahead,
all, it's all good. Wednesday was a very bad day for the orange maggot. Can you imagine? Get inside his head, and that's a scary place. You don't want to go there. I don't either. But his taxes came out, something he fought for 3.5 years, okay? You know there has to be ketchup stains all over Mar-a-Lago.
Because it's nothing but ketchup.
All he had to do was hold out for 2 more weeks, man. After 3.5 years. Yeah, now they're out. And I couldn't help but just laugh. Despite the fact I had to text Robin and say, my God, you
poor
got
little
that, Baron. Robin.
Poor little Baron's riding around on his big wheel bike. Red Rum.
Oh, I love that image. Red Rum.
On his big wheel.
Robin, you got that text I sent you, didn't you? I just, in my own head, I was just imagining how frustrated. I said, he's got to be the most pissed off person in America right now.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, the walls are covered in ketchup, but it's like that prehistoric cave in Altamira in Spain. It's not just that the walls are covered in ketchup. There are handprints in the ketchup on the walls.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, little finger drawings of buffaloes or finger drawings of you know, stick figures of Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Joe Biden.
Well, the Ways and Means Committee, it came down to a party line vote. 2 more weeks, he'd have had the vote when it ever came out. You know, he's got to be just chewing nails in there.
Okay, so we drill down from that, Steve. What does that say about the Supreme Court's determination to make sure these rulings came out in a timely fashion?
Timely? I don't know, man. Where's the inference? Where are you taking me with this?
Well, that, you know, there are at least three justices there who rely for their job on Nitwit Nero's presidency. But there were apparently enough there that were like, no, let's get rid of this case. No more hearing this case. This case has got to go. We got to get this case out the door.
Yeah.
Send the taxes to, because they send the data to Ways and Means.
Well,
yesterday.
And there was no audit. I can't show you my taxes because we're being audited.
There's no audit.
Yeah. It's like all of a sudden, I mean, what did we used to say about Herbert Cain? You know, one day you're whooping it up on the platform with the president and all that stuff, and the next month you're all
pushing up daisies.
You know, and so Trump actually is slated, and he seems to be well on his way, to being like bad news Schleprock, you know, with the black cloud over his head.
The dude from the Flintstones, the cloud followed him around.
Yeah, I couldn't remember his name.
Well,
but,
it's Schleprock, Wowsy Wowsy.
Okay.
That dude.
You know, and you know, what, 2 years ago, he's up on the stage, whooping it up, having a whale of a time.
Dancing, you know, he's doing that little dancing thing he does with his hands, yeah. And dancing.
But
yeah.
He hasn't mentioned those taxes, has he? I haven't heard anything, and I'm looking daily just to see how he's going to try to respond to this.
Oh, no, he said, the Supreme Court has lost all their honor. All their honor. They released my taxes. Believe me, they've lost their honor.
Donald, you may kiss it, and I'll let you pick which cheek.
And then
there was the Republican bullshit that came out and said, well, if they release Trump's taxes as Supreme Court, they could have their taxes released next. Well, that sounds like a good idea to me. Who the hell paid off?
I was going exactly there, Roger. I just want to, Mrs. Adelson, is that the check you wrote? Yeah, the beers and the hot dogs and the mortgage.
And doesn't past precedents dictate that all sitting presidents have their taxes audited?
Yes, they do.
Yes. And not only that, it is a recommendation of the, I believe, the IRS, but somehow the Trump's appointed to head of the IRS didn't know about it, so he didn't initiate him.
Yeah, never heard about that before.
Hey, for that matter, I actually know Chuck Reddig, if y'all want to know about that, the former IRS.
Really?
Yes, I do. I had cases against him when I was with the U.S. Attorney's Office. He worked at a very well-known boutique tax firm in Beverly Hills called Hockman, Salkin, and DeRoy. And I've lost all respect for him after I learned how he basically refused to turn over the returns to the Ways and Means Committee, as is required by law with regard to presidents. There's a specific law that says that, you know, as to presidents. There were some other things that he did that were kind of sketchy. I guess he presided over, I guess, the destruction of like 20 million or 30 million information returns that were just shredded, paper returns like W-2s, 1099s, et cetera, that kind of thing.
So, yeah, it was like a snowstorm in the shredding room.
Well, who appointed that guy?
Trump.
I see a pattern then. You have the guy who's put in charge of making sure the mail is delivered, and he fucks it up to a fairly well. And now you got this IRS guy who's supposed to oversee the, you know.
Right, and tucked away underneath all of this is a concept, you know, that's been bawled and barked by Stevie Three Shirts, you know, the man who looks like rancid hot dog water smells, Bannon, who has blathered for years about the deconstruction of the administrative state. Well, what a great way to deconstruct the administrative state by making it utterly non-functional. Oh, and let me share a couple of emails here. And thanks to, thanks so much to Lady B and to, let's see, and to Jude, and like I said, to Steve, we are, and to an anonymous friend, we are down to $170 to go to be fully funded for this week, and fully funded all the way up to this point in December, and maybe be fully funded for the entire month of, or the entire year of 2022. It's kind of a miracle. Jude wanted to clarify when she said peace on earth, and I said, well, you know, it's good to remember that that verse does not say peace on earth to goodwill toward men. It says peace on earth to men of goodwill. And Jude said, I stand firm on this intention as my walk has revealed that encountering the darkness in others enfolded in women's standing has taught me this reality. But I hear what you say. Yeah, that was actually not a commentary on what you were asserting, Jude. That's, you know, that is the good and peace-oriented position that you occupy, and I appreciate it and I respect it. Note coming in from Brendan on the population discussion. It's not overpopulation that guarantees the emergence of pandemic disease. Whilst being a big part, it's actually capitalism that guarantees the continued emergence of pandemic disease. The commodification of medicine for mere profit guarantees a worsening horror. Sorry for being a Grinch. Peace, lady. Brendan. I don't think you're wrong. I think this is one of those moments where two things can be correct at the same time. And in an economic system that is predicated upon infinite resources on a finite planet, shit's gonna get bad when you get to the end stage. And, well, we're there. And then, thank you for that, Brendan. And then this, let's see, we're 170 to go. We got a half an hour to do $170. Lady B, noting my reference to the fact that I said that Bush and Cheney should be in The Hague for the Iraq War. Lady B said, I was just talking about that to my sister today. Want to solve the immigration problem? Send some troops down there to liberate them from their tyrannical and greedy government. Isn't that our excuse when we invade the Middle East? And it was our excuse when we invaded, say, Nicaragua in the 19-teens. That was where Smedley Butler first landed on the notion of war is a racket. As far as Ukraine, isn't this similar, Lady B asks, to what happened to Serbia? Weren't war crimes being committed there, too? Didn't we send in troops to help them? Why not now? Well, we didn't. We didn't send... We bombed the living bejesus out of Serbia.
Air cover, right?
Air cover, yeah. Air cover. And we did, you know, and we helped out with Kosovo. We can't give good air weapons to Ukraine because Russia considers that an attack on them, but it's cool if they get weapons from Iran and North Korea. Jesus. Well, and we are giving them to them. We are training them outside of... We are training Ukrainian troops outside of Ukraine on how to operate things like a Patriot battery. We obviously can't send military advisors in to teach them in Ukraine how to do it because that would mean putting... formally putting American boots on the ground. I'm so fucking sick of Putin, Lady B says.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm so fucking sick of Putin. If he were a Muslim leader, he'd be dead already. In fact, if Mexico and South America had oil, we'd have already invaded them as quick as a dog steals your sandwich. That's good, Lady B. Why don't we own Venezuela already? Why can we flex in Arab countries but not here and not for Ukraine? Our priorities are fucked up. We ban brown people from entering our country. We're allowed to arm ourselves to the teeth in bumfuck Nebraska to protect ourselves from gangs in Chicago. Yet we can't punish white guys who attempted a fucking coup. We can't win for being selfish, greedy, and racist losers. Our democracy already has one foot in the grave. Trump just gave the second leg a push. I don't know what will become of the final report. Call me an Eeyore.
Thanks for noticing me.
But I know how American justice works. It isn't up to me to be positive and trust the system. It's up to the system to regain my trust. Merry Christmas, y'all. Twin and I will be 54 on the 1st, and we'll look damn good doing it. P.S. Guys, remember to let Jude into our hearts. Then we can start to make things better. Better, 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 better. Ha! I don't scream like Paul McCartney does, but you get the point. Nice call, Lady B. And that's a great line. It's up to the justice system to regain our trust. And the fact of the matter is, everybody knows that the Supreme Court of the United States is a partisan ideological shithole. And it's not a partisan ideological shithole because of the three lefties, so to speak. Not really. They're centrist as hell. It's just that the other six members of the court are to the right of Genghis fucking Khan. And so, I mean, that's just the state of affairs as it is now. And look at that. So for years and years, we celebrated Bill Mr. Stress Miller's birth on January 1st. He was the first baby born in Cleveland, Ohio, on January 1st that year, just shortly after midnight. And we've got two more January 1st babies to celebrate, Lady B and her twin. That's just so awesome. We just love y'all to pieces. Thank you for that, Lady B. Thank you. So, I'm sorry. I stepped on somebody. Let's pick this up where we left off.
I stepped on you. I just, when you mentioned, having people come actually go into Ukraine, that has the stench of Vietnam, right?
Well, any American adventurism overseas has the stench of Vietnam. I don't know.
Usually starts with instructors and advisors.
Yes. Advisors.
And as Robert A. Heinlein, who had a terrible, terrible right-wing libertarian streak, once said, a dead military advisor 3 days in the mud stinks as bad as a dead soldier. And that's a fact.
Yep.
And by the way, I need to say thank you also. Thank you to Kevin and Tracy up in Massachusetts. Y'all stay warm, please. That got us down to $130 to go to finish the week and have a fighting chance at the power bill. Thank you. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Tracy. Thank you so much. All right. Somebody talk.
Well, and maybe I'll say something. I mean, all of Congress is away for the holiday, right?
Yeah, I guess now.
Well, they couldn't get out of there quick enough.
Well, and this really kind of sucks because the days are dwindling of the Democratic majority, right?
We're done. The House is done.
What the hell we could do? Yeah, they're done, huh? Yeah, I guess I don't know what we could do.
Senate jam through judges day and night, man.
That's what we can do that, right?
Yep.
So Schumer should like open the doors.
And other than that, watch the freak show of Hunter Biden. That's all we can do.
Well, Hunter Biden, Dr. Fauci.
Mm-hmm.
They're Hillary. Going to investigate the January 6th committee. So.
Yeah, the investigation.
Oh, yeah.
But here's the thing. I mean, I agree with you with what you say about jamming through judges. Understand something. There is not a Republican judge in this country who is going to voluntarily resign with Biden in office.
I don't know.
But isn't there like 80 positions available, last I heard?
I think there are. And the Senate, and that's just a matter of the Senate doing its business. But, you know, there was an article by Ian Millhiser over at, I think, maybe Vice or Vox, I can't remember which, in which he, and I read it and I went, oh, you know, I got that Picard thing, you know, with my little forehead and my little hands. Dude, not this shit again. Because, and Ian Millhiser is a really smart legal writer, okay? And he had to know that he was putting out some serious clickbait. But he put out this article saying it's time for Kagan and Sotomayor to start thinking about retirement.
What?
And and like I said, not this shit again, but he's not nuts. He was thinking about the fact that, you know, RBG, with the benefit of 2020 hindsight, should have stepped down when at a time when theoretically Obama could have replaced her. And then we wouldn't have the handmaid. And
how old are they?
The Sotomayor and Kagan, they're in their 60s.
Okay.
But what Millhiser points out though is that there is a future coming where, especially after the Senate elections in 2024, in which Democrats have to defend 24 seats and Republicans only have to defend 10, that may make it impossible for a Democratic president to appoint a Supreme Court justice well up past 2030. And he's not entirely wrong.
But shouldn't that whole discussion be coming next year or in early 2024, not now?
Well, I mean, that's why Ian Millhiser published it now, Roger, in hopes of getting the conversation going. And it's...
I understand that, but they seem young. Comparatively speaking, to our, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, the brats and the handmaids and the Gorsucks are younger than them.
They're younger than me, you.
So what you need to do is, and frankly, you got to get out in front of it. And you got to start doing what the Republicans have started doing, and that is, relatively speaking, start appointing toddlers to the Supreme Court.
What's Chelsea Clinton up to these days? How old she?
Did she go to law school?
I don't know. Does it matter?
You don't have to, but yeah,
you don't have to.
No.
You old Chris. She's way past the toddler stage, you know?
you know who might be hell on wheels on the Supreme Court? And you're going to probably throw things at me. How old's Gavin Newsom?
He's in it like late, is he early 50s? Early 50s, I'm guessing.
Aren't we thinking of him as president, though, possibly?
Not before 2028, because he's already said that he will not primary Biden.
Well, that's good. He shouldn't. Nobody should.
From your mouth to God's ears.
I know.
But nominating Gavin Newsom would be very similar to the reason that Earl Warren got on the court.
Right.
For those that don't know, I think it was Eisenhower didn't want to try to have to go up against Earl Warren. What, in 54?
Yep.
55, somewhere in there, for the 56 election. So he put him on the Supreme Court.
And, you know, he didn't come up with that by himself, Roger.
Oh, I'm sure he did.
Because that is exactly what Abraham Lincoln did with his Secretary of the Treasury, Salmon P. Chase. Chase had started getting kind of mouthy. Running up to the election of 1864, Roger B. Taney croaked mercifully, good. Die, racist, die. And Lincoln said, Salmon, old boy, I think you'd just be a great Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court. What do you say? He went, I'd love it, Mr. President. And suddenly, Abraham Lincoln solved his own problem. And that's the same thing that Eisenhower did, Roger.
A little while ago, was it Stephen George Sam that said the Democratic Senate needs to be generating judges 24/7?
Yeah, jamming through judges.
I've got an idea. Call Wile E. Coyote and see if he could special order us one of them Acme judge generators.
With the crank on the
side. I don't think we want any Acme devices involved in this. We want to actually succeed, Scott.
Well, now, some of them work. It's just that the Roadrunner was faster than all of the...
I don't know. I say we just order up a bunch of instant hole and start flipping that shit out in front of the handmade and Fappy and...
How about a pack the court machine? That'd be even better, you know?
Hey, did we already play this game? Can we look into the crystal ball and see which committees the maggotiest of the maggots are going to chair? Like,
well, we know Jim Jacketoff Jordan's going to head judiciary.
And Marge is going to be out on something of significance too. Marge.
And Boober?
Let me jump back to the court for just a second. I had a thought. I ran it by Steve off the side chat the other day. A case went before the Supreme Court that made it to where unions cannot use dues money for political action. They have to set up a separate political action.
All right, yeah.
Okay. Why is it that when Dow Chemical or Chevron or any corporation you want to mention makes political donations, the stockholders are not polled, nor do they companies have to set up a side issue that doesn't take any money away from the stockholders when they make political donations?
Corporations
and how come
too,
we can't
friend.
Get a case before the Supreme Court without going through all the bullshit like this futuristic web designer who doesn't even have a company got her case before the Supreme Court without going through any of the pretrial shit.
Well, one of the reasons, and this goes back to the Ian Millhiser article. What?
That was the Beck decision way back when that caused the political
action committees for unions. Yeah. But by way of answering Roger's question, it kind of goes back to the Millhiser article. Because one of the things that he pointed out is that going forward with the majority the way it is, winning liberal cases before the Supreme Court is going to get harder and harder and harder, because in order to grant cert, you've got to have a majority. And you're not going to have a majority to grant cert on a case like that. Because you're 6-3.
They won't even pick it up.
Hey, Sparky?
I'm just frustrated, that's all.
Sparky, did you say it's the Beck decision?
Yeah, memory serves me right. Because I was a union organizer. Listen to me. I was a union organizer at one time.
Yeah.
And I had to learn all that shit.
Was that like Dave Beck of the Teamsters? That far back?
Could have been. I don't know. All I know is I had a member of our local come in one time, and he said he wanted to get his, it's called COPE in the IBEW.
Yeah.
Campaign political action or some damn thing. And we used to vote on it at union meetings once a year. And the guy says, I want my money back. And I pulled out my wallet and I put down $5 on the desk. And I said, there it is.
There you go.
Yeah. Don't spend it all in one place, asshole.
I said, we voted on it. You mean you weren't at. And every member paid in $5. That's it.
Yeah, and those, Committee on Political Education, COPE.
Yeah. I couldn't remember that.
Yeah, Boss Man Wayne taught me a lot about that stuff.
Yeah, well, he knows about it.
Yeah, he's run a couple in his day.
I used to be the president of our local back then, when we had a local in Redding, California, before we got merged to Sacramento. Also.
All And I saw that Jack is in around the round table this evening. Jack in Shreveport. Hey, Jack.
Hey. You know, I was just thinking, you know, the businesses get to have all their unions with, like, the chambers of commerce and all the, you know, like,
Associated Builders.
Yeah, yeah.
Business round table.
Business, industry, you know, whatever industry their, you know, association, you know, they get to do all that. And, you know, so you got, you know, big money meeting, you know, a whole bunch of other, you know, people with big money, or, and they get to lobby with all that, you know. So.
Yeah. Well, it was designed to create an uneven playing field, yeah. Plain and simple. And how? By the way, how bad is it? How bad is it in Shreveport?
Oh, it's well, we kind of screwed up, and for the first time ever, our hot water like froze. We
oh no!
So we got no hot water right now. But yeah, it's like, you know, as cold as it's been in a long time. And of course the Independence Bowl is, well, it probably just finished, and it played this afternoon. It was like the coldest ever.
What's wrong with your hot water heater, bro?
No, it just somewhere in a pipe something froze somewhere.
Okay.
And
that should remedy itself.
Yeah, the Independence Bowl wrapped up. Yeah. Houston, 7-5, beat the Louisiana Ragin' Cajuns, 23-16.
Oh, that figures. Yeah, it was 16-16 when I looked, and then I didn't look after that.
And then I guess the Gasparilla Bowl is kicking off, or just kicked off earlier.
I saw that name on the TV. Guy, but I didn't really. I don't even know what's going on with it, you know. But I was thinking Sarsaparilla.
Well, you know, there's one team that's not on the bowl list this year. My beloved Mountaineers.
Oh.
And some of these bowl names now, the Guaranteed Rate Bowl.
I could thump my chest about the Dogs, but I'm just going to sit here and not say anything.
Well, I mean, they're the team to beat. There's no getting around it.
They could take the whole kahuna.
You know, my heart is with TCU right now, just because I love their quarterback. That kid plays with more heart than I've seen in a football player in a generation or more. He's amazing. And let's see, what do we get tomorrow? We get the Middle Tennessee Blue Raiders up against the San Diego State Aztecs. That's the Hawaii Bowl. That'll be, you're watching the Hawaii Bowl, that'll be like a finger in the eye.
Well, it's kind of nice to watch the scenery and stuff, though. but yeah.
And New Mexico State Aggies in the Quick Lane Bowl against the Bowling Green Falcons of Ohio. That's Monday. The Coastal Carolina Chanticleers versus East Carolina. My poor Mountaineers.
I thought they were doing that, you know, fairly well. I mean, I just kind of glanced here and there. But...
Meanwhile, Lady B.
Eli and I are in a bowl. Eli and I are in a bowl, Robin.
I know.
I don't know who they're playing. Yeah, I know. It's crazy, right?
Mississippi State. And that's going to be a really emotional game on Monday, January the 2nd, the Bulldogs of Mississippi State, who will be coached by someone besides Mike Leach because he died last week.
Yeah, good point.
You never hear me mention the Falcons, so keep the faith.
Yeah.
Keep the faith.
The Fighting Illini are 8-4, and so is Mississippi State.
Should be a good game.
Yeah, should be. The ReliaQuest Bowl is what that is.
ReliaQuest.
I don't even know.
Is that a mouthwash?
Lady B is positing a new bowl name. The Kotex and Depends Bowl, We Stop Leaks, period. Oh, Lady B. I find feminine hygiene product jokes a lot more funny these days.
I've got one for a bowl name. And it works perfectly because it's about bowls and keeping them clean. The Santa Flush Bowl.
The Tidy Bowl?
Yeah, or the Tidy Bowl.
And we have to go all the way to like January the 2nd before we get a recognizable bowl name. Tulane versus USC in the Cotton Bowl. LSU versus Purdue in the Citrus Bowl. Well, okay. The Ohio State University against your Bulldogs. They're in the Peach Bowl.
That'll be a good fight, but I think Georgia will take it.
And then in Nash Vegas, I wonder what Billable's take is on his beloved Hawkeyes against the UK Wildcats. Two seven and five teams.
Yeah. Are they having a second bowl game in Las Vegas?
Wouldn't surprise
me. Rematch of the.
They already had the Las Vegas Bowl. Oregon State won that.
Of course, New Year's Eve, I'll be sitting down to watch the Crimson Tide against K-State. I hope Alabama doesn't show up and just, oh, fuck it, we're only playing in the Sugar Bowl, God damn it, and get stomped. Our pal Joy, like I said, is of divided loyalties because her alma mater TCU Horned Frogs are playing her beloved Wolverines of Michigan. And I guess I'm going to wrap things up here because it's gotten to the point where my feet are so frozen that they feel like they're burning. So I need to go. Yeah, I need to go and get a hot pad on them or something.
What's the temperature there, Robin?
Well, I mean, here, let me call it up, and I don't want to just speak ex cathedra.
It's 9 here, 9 whopping degrees.
It's 2 below. It's 2 below.
2 below. So I got 10.
And the thermometer in the studio is up near the ceiling, and up near the ceiling where heat rises, it's 54 degrees. But down here on the floor, I'd be surprised if it's 32.
Yeah, well, get the hell out of there, man. Go.
It's hateful.
Hot toddy time.
Yeah, oddly enough, booze makes you colder. You think you're warmer because the booze, it actually contributes to no. And see, it's not much warmer in the bedroom either.
You never got another electric floor mat like I got you or something.
Yeah, no, that one lasted for years and years and years, and I never got around to getting another one. I need to get another one. Especially if the winter is going to be like this. By the way, Matt in San Francisco let us know Gavin Newsom is 55 years old. He is the best looking 55 year old man I've ever seen. Dang.
Well, here's going to be 62 Tuesday.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, ain't none of that happening here.
9 degrees today, but 62 on Tuesday.
Let's see here. Let's see. High tomorrow is 15, high Sunday 22, high Monday 30, high Tuesday 32, Wednesday we get to 47.
Ooh, heat wave.
Thursday's 52, Friday's 56, Saturday's 56, Sunday, New Year's Day, 60, with a 50% chance of rain.
60.
Shit, after this, it gets to 60 degrees, I'll be outside in a freaking bikini. Don't look, Ethel!
Weather weirding.
It is indeed. Hey, thanks everybody. Ooh. We got down to $130, and God willing, the creek don't rise. On the air come Monday, and then I'll start on the horrifying water bill.
You know, Robin, you brought this on yourself.
Jeremy,
you brought a bikini, wireless mics, and nipple clamps.
Jesus,
you promised that for years now.
Jeremy.
What happened to Robin's Corner? I mean,
that got a little creepy.
Well, yeah, okay. We had to disband it. God damn it. That was funny for a while, man.
Yeah, until it got scary and creepy. Right.
It was funny till it wasn't. I get it.
I just want to love you. Yeah, no. Because, see, that's the problem. I got all these little voices that live in my head, and then I'd see these messages, and I hear the voices in my head even as I'm reading them silently.
So, no chance at a quick snippet tonight?
No, it hasn't been particularly disgusting this week.
I'm still not over that.
There's no there. Well, that's good.
I had a nice thing go on, and then a week ago today, he ghosted me.
Oh. And that Deckerhead, what's his loss, man?
Well, Robin, I'm still not over that note that you read about the get up stand up character. The guy, the stand up guy?
Yeah.
That note? Oh, God. I was driving and I almost drove up the road when you read that one.
about 3 weeks ago, it was so hysterical, man. Jesus, man.
And Lady B says, I never thought Robbins would be a frosty bitch. Protect your headlights. They protrude. Oh, God. TMI, Lady B. TMI.
They protrude. What do you use, duct tape or masking tape?
Freaking pencil erasers.
Well, you know, when the weather gets that cold, you can cut diamonds with them. You know?
I don't run anymore. I'm afraid I'll put out an eye.
Ouch!
And Jude says, a true family gathered tonight. Thank you, Jude. Thank you, dear. And I hope you all have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. The very merriest of Christmas to you all. We'll be thinking of you. And the fact that we will be at least marginally warm, well, we'll think of you extra special lovingly because you're the reason, the only reason. Thanks, everybody. Thank you so much for this Christmas Eve broadcast. Here in another year, we may revive the reading the Christmas story part of the Christmas program as the little ones get
so
a little
Robin,
bigger.
Are you back Boxing Day? Just program note.
Yeah, oh no, I'm here on the 26th. Yeah.
Perfect. All right, looking forward to it.
This would be the night before Christmas edition of the porch.
Yes. Oh, and you know what? I am going to stay.
Before you go, how's the eggnog? Did you make it yet?
No, I haven't made it yet, but I've got the ingredients.
Oh, good, good, good.
I got woozy just hearing the goddamn recipe and ingredients and stuff.
Are you going to use traditional egg and separate the whites, the yolks?
Oh yeah, I'm doing it. I'm doing it old school.
No kidding. They recommend don't doing that anymore because you can get botulism.
No, salmonella. But Brother Deacon Asa did the hard work on that. And what you do is you beat all the egg yolks, and then you add like a cup and a half of the booze for the recipe straight to the beaten egg yolks. And that kills everything. You're literally pouring antiseptic into the eggs.
I tried heating it up in the microwave, but my eggnog had like chunks in it.
Yeah, no, oh no, that's gross. That's gross. No, don't.
Scrambled eggnog. Nasty.
Scrambled eggnog. Jesus, I think I'm gonna get sick.
Oh, God. Well, you got to the part about
it was on the back of a Seagram 7's label, and I was like, well, I don't want to get salmonella, so I'll just heat it up in the microwave and stir it every 30 seconds.
No, that's from scrambled
eggs. From a food safety perspective, totally, I would not depend on the booze doing it. Now, having said that, if you buy eggs in the United States, they have all been washed before they go to market, which is why in the United States all eggs have to be refrigerated, whereas if you're in a European country, they don't refrigerate their eggs because they haven't been washed. And an unwashed egg is the one that is more likely to give you salmonella. So salmonella from U.S. eggs from a regular store, not your backyard chickens, but from a regular store, your chances of salmonella are exceedingly rare.
And see, this is why you're the horn staff agronomist and food scientist. Thank you, Roger.
When you got to the part in the recipe about, like, separate two eggs, my mind immediately went to Curly Howard, you know, making a cake. Eggs, and then he moves them apart.
Yeah, moves them apart, right. I always loved it when Curly got upbraided for being greedy. When Mo said, look, I got the whites, Larry got the yolk, but look at you. You got both shells.
Yeah, and he proceeds to crumps on them.
I am going to do one thing on the way out, a little bit of a tradition that I've done over the last few years. My favorite Christmas carol, and it is secular, and I love it, and I love the attitude in it. I wish Tim Minchin could rewrite it to take Dawkins out of it, because Richard Dawkins has turned out to be a bigoted, homophobic, transphobic, Islamophobic asshole. But apart from that, yeah. Tim Minchin, White Wine in the Sun, and then I'll do the goodbyes after. I always have a good cry when I listen to this one.
I really like Christmas. It's sentimental, I know, but I just really like it. I'd rather break bread with Dawkins than Desmond Tutu, to be honest. And yes, I have all of the usual objections to consumerism, to the commercialization of an ancient religion, to the westernization of a dead Palestinian press ganged into selling PlayStations and beer. But I still really like it. I'm looking forward to Christmas, though I'm not expecting a visit from Jesus. I'll be seeing my dad, my brother and sisters, my gran and my mom. They'll be drinking white wine in the sun. I'll be seeing my dad, my brother and sisters, my gran and my mom. They'll be drinking white wine in the sun. I don't go in for ancient wisdom. I don't believe just 'cause ideas are tenacious, it means that they're worthy. Freaked out by churches. Some of the hymns that they sing have nice chords, but the lyrics are dodgy. And Yes, I have all of the usual objections to the miseducation of children who in tax-exempt institutions are taught to externalize blame and to feel ashamed and to judge things as plain right or wrong. But I quite like the songs. Expecting big presents, the old combination of socks, jocks, and chocolates is just fine by me, 'cause I'll be seeing my dad, my brother and sisters, my gran and my mum. They'll be drinking white wine in the sun. Seeing my dad, my brother and sisters, my gran and my mum. They'll be drinking white wine in the sun. And you, my baby girl, my jet-lagged infant daughter, you'll be handed round the room like a puppy school, and you won't understand, but you will learn someday that wherever you are and whatever you face, these are the people who make you feel safe in this world. My sweet blue-eyed girl. Sisters and me and your mom will be waiting for you in the sun.
Tim mentioned white wine in the sun, and I should mention that if, in fact, you go, if you love that song as much as I do, and you purchase it, and I purchase it once a year, because during the months of November, December, and January, all proceeds from the sale of that song, whether it's like Apple Music or wherever you buy singles, all the proceeds from the song go to organizations that support children and or adults on the autism spectrum. And so this year, 2022, that's ASPECT, autism spectrum support group in Australia. And I love that song. When it gets to the part about the daughter, that's usually when the tears start flowing. Because, one, we've got a baby granddaughter in there. And two, my youngest, I haven't seen her in over, I think, 5 years. And I've never met my little grandson because they're out in New Mexico. And I can never get away from here. But I love the whole song. And yeah, I'm a little choked up. Like I said, thanks everybody. Thank you so much for getting us so close to being fully funded up to this point. Thank you. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you so much. Thank you to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in this ongoing discussion in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you so kindly to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky. Thanks to Roger. Thanks to Steve. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Head on .live. Remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way. 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is, of course, headon.live. No commercials. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. The merriest of Christmases to you all. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. Get your booster. Get your flu shot. Wipe down your surfaces, help stop the spread of RSV. Wear your mask, it's mask time again. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Keep your social distance among strangers, 15 to 20 feet, like Paul from Parts Unknown says. And for heaven's sakes, if some jiggling adipose wad of orange tissue comes galumphing down the road towards you, babbling about how he wants 10,000 National Guardsmen to go with him to the Capitol. Well, avoid that head of all maggots, that mother of all maggots, like the plague. Because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. I wish for you all the very merriest of holidays. The happiest of holidays. I hope you have people around you who love you. I hope you can, if you can't, I hope, well, that you can cherish memories and know that there are people out there who care and who love you. And if you are a member of this community, our little family here, are among those. So have a great weekend, everybody. And Merry Christmas. Later.